Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. And here he is, Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of The Savage Nation.
Happy Black Friday, everyone. This is Michael Savage. Today, while you're rushing around shopping, buying gifts for family, I want to play some stories about family and some of the other great stories from The Savage Nation. I want to start with a story from my new book, Train Tracks, which I hope you'll open in a bookstore today because it makes perfect reading for the holidays and a perfect gift for all ages.
And I think I'm going to pick out of nowhere about a Hegira from New York, chapter 12. It's one page long in Train Tracks about my first bus ride to Miami when I was a youngster, when I went to Miami for a vacation. I'll start it from Train Tracks. And by the way, listen to me. The book is in the bookstores. I don't sell books on this show. It's in every bookstore in America. Why don't you go out and vote by buying my book? I'll be naked and tell you that. Do you think you should stop buying conservative books and stop listening to conservative radio and suddenly become a socialist because Romney, the non-conservative, lost? The very opposite is true. Only by asserting your conservatism will we ever get a conservative to run. Now, the Republican Party doesn't know this. They're gonna draw the exact wrong conclusion again. Okay? My first Hegira from New York was a bus ride to Miami. The dining highlights, I recall, were the chicken bones in a greasy bag thrown under the seat by an old lady going to her retirement, and chicken again, this time the southern fried variety, at a bus rest stop in the middle of an Atlanta winter night. I'd always loved fried chicken as a boy, and this was really going to be a treat. To gorge on greasy chicken thighs and breasts in the heart of Dixie, where I had heard they had first perfected the recipe. The only factor limiting my enthusiasm was the time I was asleep like Ratso Rizzo, Dustin Hoffman's grizzled drifter in Midnight Cowboy, on his death ride, sweaty and in a fit of sorts, when the jouncing greyhound abruptly stopped. The lights were flashed on. "Rest stop, everybody out," shouted the bus driver. And he came down the aisle prodding each and every one of us, even the old chicken bone lady, reminding me of the cartoon cop of the past. Maybe he got a kickback from the rest stop owner, I don't know. But everyone on that bus was hounded into that eatery in the middle of the night, the doors to our bus locked. There was no escaping it. I would have southern fried chicken, even though I was slightly nauseous, beneath that 3 a.m. Georgia night sky, with stars as sharp as fractured mollusks in a barrel. It was okay, that's all. Too crusty, too greasy. Of course, today I know it was probably cooked in lard, and that the saturated fat would account for my early death had I kept on with my dietary ignorance. But the slight case of indigestion I nursed all the way to Jacksonville gave me that slight something to think about, which oh so softly pushed me into the arms of Morpheus. That's a tiny little story in Train Tracks. In going through photographs for the book Train Tracks, I found pictures of many of the men that I write about, the gambler, the leather man, the uncle who was a Democratic Party operative. What strikes me is that they were all very ordinary-looking men. You would never pick them out of a crowd and think that they were anything special. And that's just the point of this book, which is that in the ordinary, there is the extraordinary. Now, whether it is that men were more dynamic in those days or that I saw the dynamism in their lives is for anyone to guess. I don't know. Are men still like that? There is a movie called The Naked City where it is said, quote, "There are 8 million stories of the naked city. This has been one of them." I was fascinated by that as a young boy because it showed me that every individual person walking the streets had a story, if only you could find that story. And all of my life, I found this to be true, that of course every human in their destiny, in their journey through life, is actually weaving a story. It's just that most of us don't even realize we are unique or weaving a story. Or is it that the times have made so many of us homogenous? Have we become just one massive group of individuals in a sort of socialist hive? Well, whatever the case may be, Train Tracks contains the stories of ordinary men and women, each of whom was extraordinary. Now, I haven't read that since I wrote it, and I got to tell you, I want to read the book. The book rings true, and I almost hit the mark here in what I was trying to do. And as Hemingway said, if it rings, there's a certain ring to the truth that everyone recognizes when they hear it, and there's no way to describe it. That's what I want to say. Shall I go on? Shall I go on or not? I need to hear. I mean, you know, Buddy needs to hear what you want me to do. I'll tell you what I'm going to read. Nightclub. Because it's got drama. I'll skip ahead to story six in Train Tracks.
Okay.
Clear the floor, everybody. This is a closed set. Everyone out of the studio. Nightclub from Train Tracks. The bar was dark like a scene out of The Godfather. We sat next to the long, dark mahogany bar at a small table. The steak was served. I had never eaten steak that was this soft. In fact, I didn't know the steak was supposed to be soft. The only steaks I had ever eaten before were hard, rubbery, difficult to cut. This one cut like butter. The tough man served us without a smile. We were the only ones in there on a Saturday afternoon. It was on the Upper East Side of Manhattan, in what was known as Yorktown, a German neighborhood. It was owned by my friend's father, Jackie Hart, who was the toughest guy in the neighborhood. He was a professional gambler and a club owner long before anyone knew what that meant. All the other men were either small businessmen with tiny little stores, or they worked in the trades or in the garment center. Jackie was a guy out of The Godfather. He was quiet. He hardly ever spoke. Everyone respected him and everyone feared him. We had gotten downtown not by train tracks, but one of the hard men from the bar had come to get us by car to eat in Jackie's bar. There are many stories about Jackie. This was one of them, the one about the soft steak served by the hard man. Another story about Jackie that comes to mind occurred around the same period when I was 7, 8, 9 years old in the Catskill Mountains, where most of the families from our apartment building retreated to what were known as bungalow colonies, in essence small villages that were rented for the summer. Each family rented a small cottage. This was Paradise Lost. One summer my family, Jackie's family, probably 10 others, all rented individual cottages or bungalows at the same place. It was on a long, sloping, grassy hill with a swimming pool. This summer, a huge fight had broken out between the owners of the bungalow colony and this group from the Bronx. It was very unusual for these men to engage in a fight, but fight they did. It started over an insult thrown at one of our neighboring women by the owner in the little grocery store that belonged to and was run by the bungalow colony owner. Who knows what it was over, but it was a huge fight that went on for most of the day, and it ended up with Fat Pat the bookie dragging one of the brothers around the property by his collar, pulling him until he gave up, but he wouldn't give up. Fat Pat kept pulling him around, telling him, "It's time you gave up," but the guy wouldn't give up. Jackie Hart, on the other hand, got into a fist fight with one of them and bashed the guy's head in. The guy bit him in the forearm, and as you may know, human bites are far more deadly than dog bites. It took him months for that wound to heal. Jackie was a street fighter long before he was a bar owner, growing up in the Yorktown area of New York. He told a story years later to us young kids about the period during World War II when there was an actual Nazi party in New York City and other places sympathetic to Hitler. Jackie was on a subway car when one of the American Nazis jumped up and started to scream, "Kill the Jews! Kill the Jews! Kill the Jews!" Jackie was not a man given to words. He didn't react with words. He said he waited until the subway car stopped at a train station. He grabbed the Nazi and smashed his head between the car and the platform until he was a bloody pulp. And then he left without a word. That was Jackie Hart. There was a fight he talked about. Oh, my God, I'm running overboard here. I'm getting into it. Okay, this is all from my book, Train Tracks. I guarantee you, of all the books I've ever written, this one is closer to my heart and the truest of all. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It's Michael Savage. With the holidays just around the corner, consider the greatest gift that you can give your family and friends. It's peace of mind. Patrick from New Jersey writes this. The recent hurricane was devastating to our family. Grocery store shelves were cleared in a matter of hours. Thank God I was prepared and I was able to provide for my family with Wise Company emergency meals. WiseFoodStorage.com provides the most affordable, freeze-dried and dehydrated meals for emergency preparedness. From breakfast through dinner, their ready-made entrees carry up to a 25-year shelf life and are prepared in minutes simply by adding water. Visit WiseFoodStorage.com or call 855-FOODWISE today to request a free entree sample. And wait, for a limited time during the holidays, enter the promo code SAVAGE to get no-cost shipping and 10% off any order. That's WiseFoodStorage.com or call them at 855-FOODWISE. Promo code SAVAGE and you're going to get a free sample, free shipping, and 10% off any order.
Hello, this is Ty Bollinger, author of the best-selling book, Cancer: Step Outside the Box. I want you to know some very important information. In 1985, President Ronald Reagan requested that carnivora be sent directly to the White House at a time when only the president could obtain this world-class healer. Now, 27 years later, carnivore capsules are used around the world to keep people healthy. Now you can protect yourself and your loved ones in this age of superbugs with 17 naturally occurring compounds that instinctively respond to abnormal cells only without harming a single normal cell. If you want to stay healthy, now's your chance to literally wake up your critical immune cells to attack harmful invaders that don't belong in your body. Call 1-866-VENUS-FLY or order from carnivora.com. That's carnivora.com. That's 1-866-836-8735, 1-866-VENUS-FLY, or visit carnivora.com. Protect your immune system. It's the only one you've got.
Here's about traffic. It's been heavy from Marin County into San Francisco all day. This won't help. Southbound 101, Toll Plaza, Golden Gate Bridge, three cars. The left lane is blocked. Traffic, again, continues to be stacked up before the Waldo Tunnel. Still heavy. Westbound 80 coming down the East Shore from about Gilman Street to the MacArthur Maze. Northbound 880 in Industrial, getting word of a stalled car. No lane information on that, but CHP will go take a look. I'm Dave Fowke, Shot Talk 560 KSFO.
It's just that one party has taken straight aim at the middle class. The Democrats live for more onerous regulation on businesses. That's irrelevant.
Michael Savage.
Of course the Republicans are for big business, but the Democrats are for big business. It's big business that runs the country. So what's wrong with big business?
Without big business, there'd be no big country.
So let's stop being fools about it. We're no longer making buggy whips and Swiss cheese in our backyard.
The Savage Nation. Weeknights at 6 on Hot Talk 560 KSFO.
The weekend is coming! The weekend is coming!
This Friday after Thanksgiving at Ace.
The weekend is coming!
Take back Black Friday with a slow cooker on sale for $7.99 plus a $5 mail-in rebate.
The weekend is coming!
So visit your local Ace and get saving, then get your weekend back. At Ace, the helpful place. $11.99 value, limit one rebate per person, only valid Friday, November 23rd. Additional conditions may apply.
The weekend is coming! The weekend is coming!
See store for details.
Up here. It's me, your smoke alarm. Yeah, I know it's 2 a.m., but what do I care? You could shut me up by snatching the batteries out of your kid's favorite toy, or you could forget about it for good with Kidder's new worry-free smoke alarms. They all come with a sealed-in battery that lasts 10 years. That'll save you time and money, and each unit's designed to help you choose the right alarm for the right location in your home. Head to the Home Depot today and rest easy tonight with worry-free smoke alarms by Kidder.
My name is Rel, and my story is real. 2.5 years ago, after a heart attack, I lost my job. It's difficult to stand in line for food assistance when you've been on the giving end. When my health improved, I thought I'd have another job. That was many months and a mountain of resumes ago. I've kept a roof over my head, but I've exhausted my savings. The food I received from my Bay Area food bank is more than important. It was life-saving. My name is Rel. I'm your neighbor. Please give generously to your local food bank at BayAreaHunger.org.
Introducing 49ers Insider, brought to you by the San Francisco Chronicle. Follow the 49ers all season long with these exclusive pre- and post-game digital magazines delivered to your iPad twice each week. With 49ers Insider, you get hard-hitting reporting from the Chronicle Sporting Green Team, game-by-game photo galleries, fantasy football coverage, and much more. The 49ers Insider Digital Magazine is your ticket to in-depth info about your favorite team. Download from the iTunes App Store and start your subscription today.
Tackling the subjects they told you never to talk about on the only conservative station in the Bay Area. Hot Talk 560 KSFO.
I want to talk about something trivial. Went to a shopping mall today for lunch. I had my power lunch alone in a little restaurant. I prefer eating alone, but to make a long story short, as I'm walking down the mall, I see an ambulance, two police cars, and a fire truck at the end of the mall near a popular Italian restaurant. So naturally, I'm curious like everyone else. I go over. I see the fire truck, the ambulance, the police cars. I figured either someone had a heart attack in the restaurant or there had been an altercation. So I look and look and look, and I see a woman, African probably, not African-American, but African, sitting there. And one of the EMS techs is on his knees talking to her. He's on his knees now. He's almost begging her. It's almost a posture of begging the woman. And he's filling out form after form. The police are filling out forms. The firemen are filling out forms. So I said, something doesn't add up here. I don't know what's going on. So across the street, I see a security guard. So I start to ask him what went on. So he smiles. He says, I don't really know. And we talked. I said, one thing or another. He says, I don't know. He says, it looks crazy to me, too. So I said, where are you from? He said, Fiji. So I spoke to him in a little Fijian. I told him I'd been in villages going back in 1960s and this and that. And he said, oh, you were in the bush. I said, yeah, I collected plants. And I asked him what island he was from. And he told me Banga, the fire-walking island. And I said, I've been there. And he was very surprised. He was a young fellow. But he was also obviously new to the country. But he was smiling and he was very intelligent about America. He said to me, oh, he says, this is what goes on in Marin County. Now, Marin County is Barbara Boxer's backyard. It's where things idiotic and liberal occur on a regular basis. I said to him, do you realize how much this is costing to bring in this ambulance, these police cars, these fire trucks? I said, what happened to the woman? He said, let me find out. So he went over and he quietly spoke with her. And he came away smiling, and he said to me, she said she didn't feel well, so she called 911. I said, what? I said, it must have cost $200,000 in equipment and manpower, because this person didn't feel well. So he starts to laugh. He says, that's Marin County. It goes on all the time. I said, but that's why we're going broke. These people know how to abuse our country. They don't feel well, and they call 911, and they get a nice fireman on his hands and knees asking her how she feels. For fear of being sued by some rat bum from NYU, some scummy lawyer who should have been aborted as a child, because that's why the country's breaking down. It's the psychopathic communist lawyers who have twisted the police and the firemen and the entire society around their fingers. Everyone reacts for fear of a lawsuit. So we walked down the mall together, and he just said, I'm not surprised. He said, this kind of insanity goes on from the north of the county to the south. He said, it's Barbara Box's backyard. And I said, Nisambula, and blah, 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 and Samothe, which means peace in Fijian, and we bid our goodbye. So there it is. There's your United States of America, a nation filled with morons. I got to tell you this as a side note. It's an interesting little side story. It's not as good as Charlie, as Barney the Undertaker. God, I remember those Cadillacs. There was an Undertaker. The same guy showed me my first corpse down there, too. It was interesting. That, you know, I didn't put that in the book. I must have been the same age. Hot day, July, Coca-Cola, icebox, outside, grocery store. They call them bodegas, then they became clubs. You fished in the bottom of the Coca-Cola box. They had ice in it that turned to water. And your arm turned blue as you fished around for a soda. That kind of day. And the Undertaker's there. My father was busy working in the back of his little shop making a lamp or cleaning. I don't know what he was doing. He wired a lot of statues into lamps, and he was busy doing that. Hot day, I'm outside, so I ask him what's going on in the mortuary down there. You know, it was a funeral parlor, but they performed embalming. They did embalming. So he said, well, would you like to see what goes on? I said, okay, sure. So get in the elevator. And you get, it was one of those elevators like in lofts where you pull a big cord from the top like a Godfather elevator they move cars on. And to this day, I can hear the hum of that elevator, the motor. And I'm going down this huge car elevator into the basement, the subterranean depths of a funeral parlor. We get down there, walk into the, and there's a doctor performing an autopsy. No, it wasn't an autopsy. Sorry, this was the embalming story. And, okay, that's it. So there it is. Now I come back up in the street. Must have been a half an hour later. My father's in the undershirt outside the store, and he's looking for me. Hey, Michael, where? And he turns and he sees me, and when his eyes caught my eyes, he saw I was a changed person. And that's my Undertaker story.
The deep right field, that ball is going, it is gone. Maris hitting his second homer of the day.
And there is the nostalgia setup, the Mel Allen voice, one of the greatest voices radio has ever heard, and one of the earliest radio voices that I came to love. And here I am, sitting in front of a microphone with a radio voice that millions love, now with another story that will be in my autobiography. And it's called My First Embalming, since we talked about The Undertaker, and here it is. I was now a late teenager. And I had gone to Europe, big trip to Europe, you know, hippie, beatnik trip to Europe, see the museums, blah, 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 came back on a ship. I come back from Europe, and I thought I had become a little off base. It was a little kind of teenage angst, little nuts. So I took a job in a mortuary at Queens General Hospital. I can remember it to this day. Red brick, big smokestack, looked like a crematorium. And I go in there as an assistant to just basically mop up and sweep up in a mortuary. And I had never seen an embalming. I don't know why I took that job of all jobs. It was like a bizarre choice to begin with. I guess it proves I was a little off-based after going to Europe. But then again, I wouldn't be the first nor the last person to come back from Europe and think they were a little crazy. Just take a look at Europe. So I go down into the thing, and the guy gives me an apron and a mop. And he says, "Just basically, your job is to mop up the floor." But meanwhile, I'm watching the autopsies. This was not this is really my first autopsy, not my first embalming. It's my first autopsy. So I watched the doctor. Now, here's a doctor with a medical degree. He was a medical examiner performing an autopsy. He has a cigar in his mouth, which I thought was weird and kind of disrespectful to the dead. The guy is chomping on a cigar. He cuts open a dead woman's head, like the top of her head, to pull back the skull cap and to remove the brains for, you know, that's what an autopsy is you examine the organs. And I'll never forget it as long as I live. She happened to have been an African-American lady and a large woman, and he was pulling and pulling and pulling, and the skull wouldn't pull off, and he puts his foot up against the gurney that she's on, or the stainless steel thing, and pulling and cursing, and the cigar, and I'm mopping. The kid in the room there, I couldn't believe what I'm watching. And finally, he curses, and there it comes out, and that's it. So now then I see another man. Man must have been 50, 55, white man in good shape, just slim, gray-haired, but not old-looking, dead. And he was completely naked, as you would expect, on a slab. And the kid's mopping, 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 and I look very carefully at the corpse. And I noticed some semen on his thigh, which again was novel and unique, because I didn't understand much about death at that time, as much as I since learned. And then there was a young child, 2 or 3 years old, as beautiful as a doll, blonde hair, blue eyes, like a doll, still and dead, for no reason. Still and dead for no reason. I quit the next day and threw in my mop.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282.
Who's watching your home when you're not there? It could be a burglar. Burglars prefer to break in when they think no one is home, and no one will stop them. Don't be an easy target for intruders. Protect your home with a free security system monitored by ADT, the leader in home security. Call now and get free hardware, free medical and fire alert, and free activation. It's an $850 value. Call right now and you'll also get 6 free sensors. That's 6 points of protection for free. Just call Protect Your Home, your authorized ADT dealer, at 1-888-987-3232. You'll get 24-hour protection, and there's no cost for parts or activation. Call now about a free security system monitored by ADT. Call 1-888-987-3232. $99 installation charge, 36-month monitoring agreement at $35.99 per month. Total package includes 6 door window sensors. Labor charges may apply. Call for terms and conditions to this offer and Protect Your Home license numbers. Call now, 1-888-987-3232.
Good afternoon, I'm Dave Funk, Hot Talk 560 KSFO. The move by big retailers to open their doors at midnight on Thanksgiving night or even earlier may be here to stay. A spokeswoman at the Mall of America in Minneapolis says 30,000 people showed up for the mall's opening at midnight compared with 20,000 last year. About 11,000 shoppers were in lines wrapped around Macy's flagship store in New York City when it opened at midnight. That's up from an estimated 9,000 to 10,000 last year. A union-backed group says it held an estimated 1,000 protests in 46 states against Walmart stores today. The protests seemed to do little to keep shoppers away, though, as the company says it was its best Black Friday ever. KSFO traffic southbound 101 Waldo Tunnel. Have an accident. Was in the left lane. They're trying to push it off to the right side. That's about where traffic will start to slow down at Spencer as you make your way to the Golden Gate Bridge. Southbound 880 at 237. An accident being reported. I'm Dave Fox, Hot Talk 560 KSFO.
Some days you just don't have a a good day.
Most of us just did not see it coming.
I honestly believe Mitt Romney was going to win.
Mike Huckabee.
It's not enough to tell everybody what's wrong with the other guy.
But that's what they were doing to us. Doesn't matter.
That can't be our whole defense.
That we want to be just as nasty as the other side. No, we want to be visionary. And we want to talk about opportunity and freedom and what it means to have liberty.
Weekdays 9 to noon on Hot Talk 560 KSFO.
Relax, it's the holidays. Take a load off and join us this Saturday from noon until 1 on KSFO to hear strategies on how to protect your wealth and build wealth safely. The Ask Mr. Annuity Show is your roadmap to retirement. Mr. Annuity, he has the answers on all things retirement, from immediate annuity to tax-free retirement to income for life strategies. Tune in this Saturday from noon until 1 on KSFO. For more information, go to AskMrAnnuity.com. That's AskMrAnnuity.com.
I know this may sound funny, but when my hair looks good, I feel good. And this holiday season, I'm going to buy a new outfit, get my nails done, and do something great for my hair. I'm going to buy myself the Ovation Cell Therapy Holiday Gift Set.
Ovation Cell Therapy is guaranteed to help grow your hair thicker, stronger, longer, and faster, up to twice as fast. With just an easy rinse-out application of Ovation Cell Therapy, the breakage and damage caused from harsh chemicals, heat, styling, and overprocessing can be repaired. And your hair will look and feel healthy again.
Look your best this holiday season. Give yourself the gift you'd love to receive. The Ovation Cell Therapy Holiday Gift Set. An assortment of the most popular Ovation products at a very special holiday price.
Order your Ovation Holiday Gift Set now before they're all gone at OvationHair.com. That's OvationHair.com. And be sure to enter KSFO at checkout to receive a special introductory discount. OvationHair.com.
It's time to play Who's My Termite Company, brought to you by Planet Orange. Do you prefer a technician who has A, completed weeks of training, or B, experience delivering pizzas? Should your technician have performed A, hundreds of treatments, B, three, including yours? Do you want the person who comes out to your home to A, be knowledgeable, professional, and courteous, or B, refer to you as dude?
When it comes to protecting your home from termites and pests, don't play games. Call Planet Orange at 1-800-7-ORANGE. The best-trained technicians, an industry-leading two-year warranty with free annual re-inspections, prices that are comparable or less than what others charge. Call 1-800-7-ORANGE now. That's 1-800-767-2643. Or go to planetorange.com to schedule a free termite and pest inspection now.
My name's Kanan, and I've performed over 1,200 treatments for Planet Orange.
Go to planetorange.com or call 1-800-7-ORANGE for Planet Orange. Doing the right thing was never so easy.
Mike Huckabee.
You can't go and poke the eyes out of the other side every day and then walk in and say,
oh, by the way, we really love you guys and
we'd like to work with you.
On Hot Talk 560 KSFO.
You're listening to an encore segment of The Savage Nation.
You know, I have in my hands a book called The Importance of Living by Lin Yutang. Those of you who have listened to my show since 94 understand the charm of this man, and how I've talked for years about the book, The Importance of Living, which I discovered when I was 18 and going through my sufferings of young Werther phase. And I thought, oh, life is horrible, you know, oh, it's me, I can't take it anymore. And I found this book, The Importance of Living, where he brought the yin and yang together. He taught me that we are basically, although we have a soul, that we're monkeys, our bodies are that of a monkey. I mean, I know many of you are offended by that, but truthfully, you know, it's been put another way, that we're in the Neanderthals, the Neanderthal diet. But you got to remember that the human body is that of an animal. And that's where all your trouble begins. Anyway, this book put me together because there were chapters in it like, let me give you an example, Lin Yutang, The Importance of Living. But I never saw a book like this which talked about views of mankind, Christian, Greek, and Chinese, our animal heritage, the monkey epic, on being mortal, on having a stomach, on having strong muscles, on having a mind, and on human dignity and the rise of human civilization. Then he goes into enjoyment of life. That's what I'm getting at. And he talks about whole chapters on sex, on celibacy, a freak of civilization. My favorite chapter was the enjoyment of living, on lying in bed. A whole chapter on lying in bed, on sitting in chairs, on conversation, on tea and friendship, on smoke and incense, on drink and wine games, on food and medicine, the inhumanity of Western dress, on house and interiors. And I remember I read this when I was 18 years old, which goes back quite a few decades. And when I first stumbled upon it, I was astounded by this. And it was a combination of sort of our animal bodies with our spiritual beings. In a way, I had never been able to unify the two. You know, kids grow up, they don't know what they are. Either you run too much in one direction or too much in the other. Either you become too much of the spiritual and you try to deny the body, or you become too much of the animal, you know, the pleasure seeker, and you deny your spirit. And this book, for me, brought it all together. And one of the favorite parts for me was Chin's 33 Happy Moments. And I don't know if the people listening to this show, since I'm in a sort of different mood today and I had enough with Obama, this stuff was good stuff. And it was the happy moments of a Chinese as described by a 17th century playwright in China named Chin Shengtan. And he wrote about, he sat with his friends when they were locked up in a temple for 10 days on account of rainy weather, and they thought about what were the truly happy moments of human life, moments in which the spirit is tied up with the senses. And he writes about them, and I'm not going to read all of them to you. I'm going to give you a taste of some of them, and you'll see if you get a kick out of them. Here's one. See if it strikes you as a happy moment in your life. I wake up in the morning and seem to hear someone in the house sighing and saying that last night someone died. I immediately ask to find out who it is and learn that it is the sharpest, most calculating fellow in town. Ah, is this not happiness? Remember this? Remember he wrote that happiness does not consist in the flights of poets, of that kind of thing, but happiness consists in getting your hair cut every 2 weeks and watching your neighbor fall off the roof? That's what I was trying to talk about. In other words, that's human nature, is this normalcy. And also, if you get pleasure in seeing someone you hate fall off a roof, don't be guilty about it. Everyone likes to see their evil neighbor fall off a roof. Here's another one. Wait. It has been raining for a whole month, and I lie in bed in the morning like one drunk or ill, refusing to get up. First of all, that unto itself is beautiful. We work so damn hard in America. We never lay in bed. We think it's bad for our hearts. The opposite is true. I'm a big believer in laying in bed. I believe that laying in bed is way underestimated. I think we're just crazy with our running and our dashing and our this and our that. Anyway, listen to this one. It has been raining for a whole month, and I lie in bed in the morning like one drunk or ill, refusing to get up. Suddenly, I hear a chorus of birds announcing a clear day. Quickly, I pull aside the curtain, push open the window, and see the beautiful sun shining and glistening, and the forest looks like having a bath. Ah, is this not happiness? Okay? Let's see then. Here's another. A few more. It's so disconnected from today. Here, I love this one. To cut with a sharp knife a bright green watermelon on a big scarlet plate of a summer afternoon. Ah, is this not happiness? You get the picture? In other words, can you see a watermelon on a hot day and just cutting it and get pleasure out of it? That's what he's talking about. We've lost this. We think that because the ad men have so jumbled our brains, the mad men, the advertising, that we have to go somewhere to find happiness. We have to buy something to find happiness. We all know that that's rubbish. I have long wanted to become a monk, but was worried because I would not be permitted to eat meat. If then I could be permitted to become a monk and yet eat meat publicly, why then I would heat a basin of hot water and with the help of a sharp razor shave my head clean in a summer month. Ah, is this not happiness? To keep 3 or 4 spots of eczema in a private part of my body and now and then to scald or bathe it with hot water behind closed doors. Ah, is this not happiness? I mean, does this translate well anymore? I mean, I love this book. It reminds you how simple things are. You know, a few more. I love this one. Wait. A traveler returns home after a long journey, and he sees the old city gate and hears the women and children on both banks of the river talking his own dialect. Ah, is this not happiness? Now, let's say we don't have an old city gate, and we don't have our own dialect, or do we? We certainly do have regional accents. How about when you've been on a long business trip, and you come back to your city or your town, and just the sound of the horns, and just the sound of the cab driver, even if he's from Bengali, even if he is a Bengali, isn't that what makes you feel good and at home and happy? That's what we're talking about. Here's a nice one. I am not a saint, and I am therefore not without sin. In the night I did something wrong, and I get up in the morning and feel extremely ill at ease. I am not a saint, and I'm therefore not without sin. In the night I did something wrong, and I get up in the morning and feel extremely ill and ease about it. Suddenly I remember what is taught by Buddhism, that not to cover one's sins is the same as repentance. So then I begin to tell my sin to the entire company around, whether they are strangers or my old friends. Ah, is this not happiness? Sort of sounds like Oprah. Here's one that I've really lived by. This is me. To open the window and let a wasp out of the room. Ah, is this not happiness? That's a good one. Have you ever let a wasp out of a room or a fly and felt something? Huh? I have. I've done that. To see someone's kite line broken. Ah, is this not happiness? To see a wild prairie fire. Ah, is this not happiness? To have just finished repaying all one's debts. Ah, is this not happiness, Obama? Now, if he went to China and said, I'm finished repaying my debts, by the way, see if you can collect it, then I would say I would love the guy. If he could go to China and say, you know what, let me tell you something. We owe you a couple of $1 trillion. We ain't paying you. We can't pay you. You're never going to collect. But I'm willing to negotiate right now 10 cents on the dollar. Then I would say, ah, is this not happiness?
Savage.
One little joint supplement. You know this powerful little pill is great for your joints, it's great for your cartilage, it even has powerful benefits to help increase your mobility and flexibility. But the joint supplements of today are sadly incomplete because they don't start relieving joint discomfort immediately. Until now. Introducing the complimentary 2-week sample of fast-acting Instaflex, our most powerful joint formula ever. It can start relieving joint discomfort in just a few days. The only thing our complimentary sample of Instaflex is missing is the price. Because right now, we're offering adults a complimentary 2-week sample as part of a nationwide giveaway. Call and claim your sample today. 1-800-946-9745. Great for your knees, hands, even your hips. Fast-acting Instaflex can start relieving joint discomfort in just a few days. Instaflex is available at GNC, Rite Aid Pharmacies, and Vitamin World, where you can only get your complimentary 2-week sample by calling 1-800-946-9745. Call now for your 2-week Instaflex sample. 1-800-946-9745.
What are you going to do with your old car? You can try selling it, you could junk it, or you can donate it to Heritage for the Blind. Your car will be towed away for free, and your donation is tax deductible. Just call 1-800-895-8035. Heritage for the Blind accepts cars, vans, trucks, and boats. It doesn't matter if your vehicle runs or not. It will be towed away for free, and you'll be supporting those that need help. Heritage for the Blind is a nonprofit organization that helps the visually impaired live fuller lives. Call right now to donate your car, and as a special thank you, you'll receive a free 3-day vacation voucher to over 50 locations. Call Heritage for the Blind right now. Call 1-800-895-8035. Donating is easy, and your vehicle is towed away for free. Plus, you'll get a free vacation voucher for donating. Call now, 1-800-895-8035. That's 1-800-895-8035.
We still have slow traffic southbound 101 coming off the Waldo Tunnel. Earlier stalls been cleared, but traffic is going to be heavy down to the bridge itself. Southbound 680 at Highway 24, a stalled car being reported. That's in the second lane from the left, and it's still going to be slow on the east shore. Westbound 80 as you make your way from Gilman to the MacArthur Maze. I'm Dave Fowkes, Shaw Talk 560 KSFO.
We conservatives do not accept bipartisanship in the pursuit of tyranny. Period.
Mark Levin.
We will not negotiate the terms of our economic and political servitude. Period. We are the alternative. We will resist. We're not going to surrender to this. We're not good losers. You better believe we're sore losers. A good loser is a loser forever.
I'm a loser, baby. Weekdays at 3 on Hot Talk 560 KSFO.
Hurry in for the Sears Black Friday event. Save up to 50% on appliance doorbusters. Doors open Thanksgiving night at 8 p.m. Only Sears has all 10 of the top 10 appliance brands. This is the top 10 advantage. This is Sears.
Put down the controller and step away from the TV. It's time to bring your gaming skills outside with Urban Adventure Quest. Use your smartphone to navigate through San Francisco by solving clues and completing fun challenges. Thanks, SweetJack.com.
My name is Michelle.
And I'm Devin.
And our story is real. My 9-year-old daughter and I lost our home in a fire. The impact on our lives was devastating. While we recover from our loss, my biggest challenge has been covering the basics, finding a safe place to live while continuing to provide my child with nutritious meals. In the meantime, Devin and I rely on the healthy food we receive from our Bay Area food bank. My name is Michelle.
And I'm Devin.
And we're your neighbors. Please give generously to your local food bank at BayAreaHunger.org.
If you're looking for cash, then get up and head on over to Cash Creek. You see, it's the season with a reason to get out and harvest some nice, crisp green. So come to Cash Creek, where you can rake in the cash, now through November 25th. All of our lucky players will have the chance to gather piles upon piles of cash. Our branches are heavy and ready to drop. Every day from 6 p.m. to midnight, every hour on the hour, some lucky player will bag $500 cash. Plus, every Saturday and Sunday, there will be three cash drawing winners at both 7 and 11 p.m., where each winner can rake in up to $2,000 cash. Now that's a cash windfall. And it's just one of the many reasons to postpone the yard work and head over to Cash Creek. Because money can grow on trees, you can rake in the cash. Only at Cash Creek. Play the best close to home. Visit CashCreek.com for more details.
Tackling the subjects they told you never to talk about on the only conservative station in the Bay Area, Hot Talk 560 KSFO.
Tomorrow and tomorrow creeps in this petty pace from day to day to the last syllable of recorded time, and all our yesterdays have lighted fools the way to dusty death. Out, out, brief candle. Life's but a walking shadow, a poor player that struts and frets his hour upon the stage and then is heard no more. It is a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. The sound and fury quote from Shakespeare's Macbeth. He's talking about the ephemeral nature of life and how brief it is. Life's but a walking shadow, a poor player that struts and frets his hour upon the stage. And then is heard no more. It is a tale told by an idiot full of sound and fury signifying nothing. I think many of us feel this and don't talk about it. We take the Prozac, or we take the psychic Prozac called television, or the psychic Prozac called football, or baseball, or basketball, or rap music, or whatever it may be, or the crack, or the cocaine, or the marijuana, or the alcohol, or whatever it may be, or the running. And you can get very, very cynical about it all and say, what's the point of trying if it's all a charade and we're going to die anyway? You know, that's depressing. And there are many answers to that question that are life-affirming. There are many reasons to go on. I learned so much in my childhood, I didn't even know I was learning it. That's the beautiful part of it. In that sense, I would say I had a very rich childhood because so much was seen and heard and overheard. And I look back now, look, here's a story I told maybe once for 2 seconds. Relating to the ephemeral nature of life and how you can really go down, you know, off the deep end if you look at this the wrong way and you don't have the right spiritual or emotional support. There was a woman in the neighborhood in Queens, attached houses. I can't get any more detailed. The attached houses, which to us was a gigantic step up. It was like the Queens Palace from where I had come from, a little green yard. And one of the neighbors in the block, he was really high class because he was a doctor. So he had a wife who had a nervous breakdown, so-called. I don't even think they use the phrase anymore, nervous breakdown. I don't even know what it is. What happened was she stayed at home all day, and she wandered the streets of Queens, or that neighborhood, and she would take people's arms and say, what's the meaning of living if we're only going to die? Now, she had 2 children, and the other women didn't know what to say to her. She could not understand why she should live if only she was going to die. Then she would say, but my children are also born to die. I mean, that spooked out a lot of the women in the neighborhood, so they stopped talking to her. Now, maybe she was, in her own way, touching upon the sound and fury quote from Shakespeare of tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow. And haven't you seen that picture? And how did you get past that? What gives you the reason to struggle and go on? Why do you struggle? You ever look at your children and say they're too going to fade like dust, ashes to ashes and dust to dust? And yes, we all get those thoughts if we're you. When you look at your pet, your fish, your dog, your cat, you know, I got a box upstairs with ashes in it. I got a mother and a father and a brother in a grave and a grandmother and grandfather and ancestors in graves, as you do. We all do. And yet, you know, it's a strange society. We never talk about death in that way. All we talk about is victimhood and suffering and how everyone's a victim. But do we really talk about the meaning of life and the meaning of death, or only about death as an opposite to life, meaning you're no longer a consumer? See, once you die, you're of no use to the Murdochs and the Morlocks and the meatheads who need you as a consumer, an idiot to watch or an idiot to buy. In other words, a consumer. If you're dead, you're no longer a good consumer, except perhaps you can still buy a casket from one of these operations. Perhaps they'll figure out a way to sell you a conservative casket or a liberal casket with an inscription on it. It's probably not a bad business, where they now start monogramming caskets or something. But what motivates me to go on, for example? How do I do this every day? Why do I do this anymore? I don't really need the income. My children are grown. They're doing very well. I have enough to, you know, basically retire on. I could have retired a long time ago. Why do I do this? You'll have to ask yourself, why am I not as desperate to sell you something as some men are who are younger with young children? And I understand why they have to peddle and they have to sell you and they have to con you day and night to sell you another item or another. I understand it. They're younger than me by probably 20 years, many of them, and they haven't made their fortune or their marks, and they're very insecure about that. So they continue to sell you things that you don't really need. So therefore, if I'm not really selling you anything, what is it that motivates me every day? Well, it's an obligation to God primarily. I know you say, well, who is he kidding? What, are you kidding me? Take it for what it is. I don't really care whether you believe me or not. I know I mean every word I just said to you. You see, I was ruined in life several times, primarily by liberalism. Liberalism destroyed me, or almost destroyed me, and almost put me into the grave. The liberals, through affirmative action, stole my birthright. They took it from me. They turned me into a nun person. And they said that less qualified women and less qualified minorities only need apply. And they said, you shall not apply, even though you are a white male, you're of no value whatsoever, to our new America. Well, it was tough for me to bear. And had I let it get to me, I would have died or never struggled again. And I told you what happened. I told you how it happened. And it's amazing. It was a certain time in my life, and it was about 16 years ago. And everything had gone bad for me because of affirmative action and because of a few scoundrels in the vitamin business, ruthless gonoffs of the lowest order. Things had gone really bad for me. And I wanted to give up. I really did. Well, my son, we were living in this is an interesting story in a way. I had to move back to a house that I had purchased, a small house that I had purchased a few years before as a rental unit. And things had gotten so bad, I had to move into my own rental unit. And it wasn't a happy time for us. The children were still teenagers, blah, blah, blah. So I was sitting in this dark little horrendous room that I called a study, which was really a converted nursery. It was disgusting, with a little tiny window. There was nothing, there was no nobility in it whatsoever. It was a complete failure. And this was after a PhD, two master's degrees, 16 books. No matter what I did, it was like I had dug for oil. I was like a wildcatter, and 1,000 wells had come up dry. I said, I'm not doing this anymore. So I called my son in, who was a teenager, and I said, son, I'm not going to work anymore. I'm going to retire because I there's no point to this. Well, he said to me, you can't retire. He said, that's giving up. He said, men retire at 65. I got so pissed off at him, I chased him out of the room, and I ran after him down the block. And you know what? Because of that, I was embarrassed. And for him, I had to get off my behind, get out of the gutter, and I had to struggle again. That's when I created the tape, the first radio tape. So help me God. A few months later, I created the mock radio tape and sent it out to 400 stations. And the rest is really history. That turned me around. But, you know, it was based upon a lot of prayer and a lot of thought and family. Family keeps us together. So having said that, I had only asked God for one thing. During the darkest moments of my failures, well, really, I should say the failures of our society, which took some of the most talented white men in history and put them on the shelf in order to promote people who were less qualified, simply to make people feel better, and in order to introduce socialism to America at a faster pace. I said to God, all I ask you for is to give me a living. I beg you not for riches. I beg you not for fame. I beg you only for a living. Well, I now have a very good living in talk radio and as a writer. But you see, it came with a burden. Remember I told you that God answered my prayers, but there's always something attached to his answer? He didn't say, here, go, you're going to win the lottery. Because if he had said, here, because you suffered so much, my son, put $4 on number 933B7, and you're going to win $90 million in fastball or something. Well, I probably would have blown my head off by now if I had won some kind of lottery. I'm a worker. I was raised to work. I'm going to work until probably I can't work anymore. And it's because I was raised this way. It's in my genes. My father, to him, the most important value in a boy was working. Every time he mocked me, it was because I was too lazy or I wasn't working hard enough. And the way he mocked me is he would say to his friends when I was a little boy in his store, look at this, look at the worker I have for a son. He's a real hard worker, isn't he? And the other men would say, oh, come on, leave him alone. He's not a bad kid. He'll be a good worker. And my father would look at me and sarcastically say, yeah, look at the worker I have. Always dozing off or something of that effect. So to him, work was a great value. It's almost laughable in this hedonistic age that we live in where work is considered déclassé. Well, I know that there are many men who have much less than I do financially who are retired. And good luck to you if you are, and I understand it. But I'm not made that way. I wouldn't know what to do with myself from the beginning of the day to the end. I wouldn't know how to spend my time. Now, maybe that's sad. Maybe it is sad that I don't know how to enjoy myself on a golf course or a tennis court. It is possible, but it's not in my genes. I did not learn how to play golf. I learned how to sled on a cobblestone street in the Bronx. I did not learn how to ski. And when I went to college, there were kids even in Queens College or working college who were going to ski lifts and skiing. I'm not a skier. I didn't understand the fun of skiing, and I know those who do. In fact, when my children were very young, I took them skiing. I taught them how to ski. I figured it's a great American sport, and I admire those who can really ski. But when I have gone to the mountains in the last few years during ski season, I don't want to ski. It's a zoo. It's a zoo. It looks like a bunch of automatons. Clankety, 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 clank. Line them up. Here they come. Take them up, shoot them down. Get them drunk at night. Take them up, shoot them down. Get them drunk at night. Take them up, shoot them down. Clankety clank, clankety clank. Where's the beauty in that? I used to go to the High Sierras and I used to walk in the winter. I used to snow walk. I don't do it anymore. You know why? Because of yahoos on snowmobiles. I won't even walk in the woods anymore. Do I want to listen to a putt shooting by on a snowmobile? Shooting out dirty, ugly fumes on a snowfield that I used to walk on? In the absolute silence, did you ever hear the silence of a snowfield? Can you still hear it? The whoosh and the hiss of snow and sound? America has become a gigantic noise cesspool. There's almost nowhere to go anymore for any peace and quiet. Every neighborhood, there's not a neighborhood in America that is affluent and beautiful that you can live in any peace.
Savage. Warning, The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. And here he is, Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of The Savage Nation.
In this hour on The Savage Nation, I want you to listen to a great story that you've never heard before on the radio, A Speculator in the Garden of Numbers. It's a portion from one of my, well, short, long stories, or long, short stories from my newly released Train Tracks, which I highly recommend for family reading.
Amherst, New York, Deanna, welcome. Oh, is it Deanna or Diana?
It's Diana.
It's like that, hold me, squeeze me, Diana. Okay, it's Diana.
Yeah, it's like Lady Diana. First of all, you sent me that book, Train Tracks. I called the other day.
Wait, what are you, a stalker? What do you mean, I sent it to you?
No, I called you the other day. I'm calling to thank you for the book, because it came in 2 days.
You got it already? You got it in 2 days?
Yes, I did, and I had work to do today, and I had to keep putting it down. It was, you know, I would work, and then I'd pick it up, and then I'd work, and then I'd pick it up. And I wanted to tell you, The Speculator in a Garden of Numbers, that is a genius chapter. It's just genius. I keep reading the same pages
people over. People don't realize that I began in literature as a poet, as a story writer, and I was a scientist for many years with a real PhD, and I've been a talk show host for 18 years. I've had many incarnations, but that story that you just mentioned, The Speculator in the Garden of Numbers, is actually a minor American masterpiece. It's about a time that I tried to become a speculator in cocoa stocks, and I thought I was making a fortune when I lost every penny I had. And it's what I went through as a poor young guy who had some money and started to speculate and got ripped off by a commodities broker who steered me wrong. But I mean, it was an amazing story, and it's really up and down.
Fully riveting. I wanted to tell you thank you. I don't know how many people ever call and just thank you for something you sent them, but I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much. Hold me, save me, Diana. That is a good story for now, The Speculator in a Garden of Numbers. I don't know if I'm going to read it now. Yeah, I'm going to read a piece of it. It's from my book, Train Tracks. I'm going to read one or two paragraphs. He was not of a wealthy family. His father, a small shopkeeper, now dead, had managed to rectify his penniless immigrant childhood position, but never managed to attain what was known as a comfortable status. The son was warned about investments at an early age. On one of their many summer rides in the Catskill Mountains, they both watched a raceway being dozed and carved out of a distant cornfield. The small father lectured the smaller boy. Sure, they move a little earth around, get you to invest in their scheme, and after they've milked the public for all they can, they declare bankruptcy. They can keep their racetrack. The small boy believed his father's every word. He worshipped the forceful, handsome man for his ability to say loudly what he felt, not just within the confines of the household, but outside as well. The man knew what he was talking about and told you so. Well, the raceway was slowly but certainly constructed and eventually operated very successfully. Those who had purchased shares in the embryonic raceway corporation were rewarded for their faith with substantial capital gains. The son never mentioned the completed track to his father, though they would pass it each summer over the years. There would be no point in proving his father wrong. He was right about too many other things for this error to have any impact on their relationship. As the little boy became a man, his father grew neither more rich nor more poor. His income remained the same throughout the years, rising just slightly with inflation. The small family home was always secure. The children had enough money to attend the municipal college, and the two parents, with simple wants, were able to go away every summer to a bungalow in the mountains. The family dry goods shop was managed with honesty and without credit, and provided a moderate but secure income. The father would justify his moderate position from time to time, as one friend or another would move to a more expensive home, take a cruise, or purchase something truly showy. He would lecture the boy, his daughter, and his wife about his friend's foolishness. He simply did not believe in the American dream. He smelled a fraud, but was unable to prove his suspicions until many years later. One of his friends, a corpulent man he had grown up with on the Lower East Side, went bankrupt. The journey back from his expensive home out on the island to one room in a poor relations apartment with his three children took less than 1 year. It seems that women no longer knitted as they did during and after the Second War. The little man's children were pulled out of school to earn their food, while the once prosperous yarn merchant became a clerk in a competitor's shop. Sadly, the boy's father took pleasure in his friend's plight. I told you he was overextending himself. All the years he came in here and shot his mouth off. Look where it got him. All the time borrowing from Peter to pay Paul. I knew all along it was no good. The bankruptcy of the yarn man served to shore up the position of the dry goods man against investments and credit borrowing. The boy learned to respect his father's position even more firmly through this lesson in reality. Another of his father's successful friends came to ruin in a different way. His daughter died from an overdose of heroin in an infamous New York hotel frequented by unsuccessful artists. Once again, the man's moderate approach to life seemed to be the right one. Though his children would not distinguish themselves in any great way, they would not bring shame to the family either. As time would have it, the dry goods man died in middle age of a second heart attack. The boy named Sam, now a shaky man of 31, had on his own managed to accrue what would have been a small fortune to his father. The capital was not exactly earned illegally, but it could not be said that the money had been earned from legal endeavors either. It seems that taxes were not paid on income derived from a bookstore that drew substantial profits by selling books purchased from illegitimate sources. The young man managed to save between $80,000 and $90,000 in a little more than 3 years. The cash sat in a safe cemented in the basement floor of Sam's mother's house. The young merchant let it sit there without making any investments. He distrusted Wall Street as a result of his father's indoctrination over the years and never learned much about any other financial opportunities available to the small investor either. However, Sam always heard that real estate was good, a nice, safe way to build a fortune. But each time Sam would make an offer to purchase a small parcel of land, the deal would not be consummated. He would make an unrealistically low offer, which would be rejected. On receiving back his deposit, he would feel as though he had somehow made money simply because he had not lost any. It's pretty good. You know, I'm reading this to myself right now on the radio show. This is the Savage Nation for my short story collection, Train Tracks. And you know what it reads like? It reads to me almost like a Chinese short story. If this was written by an author from China about a family in China, the Chinese would love this story. It should be translated into the Chinese. Anyway, let me go on, and I'm going to stop in a minute because I'll show you where it's going, and then I'll stop, and you'll read the book yourself. The five or six parcels he failed to buy increased two or three times in value over the 3 years he kept track of their prices. This confirmed Sam's appraisal of his business sense. He thought he was a shrewd buyer but lacked the faith necessary to put his money into an investment. After 3 years of testing himself, he was ripe for making a dramatic move. He would no longer wait around to die like his father, while enormous profits could be realized by signing his name to a few slips of paper. Sam was an avid reader. He not only sold books, but inherited that love for the written word that was woven throughout the fabric of his people. He had just read a small book about useful plants of the world and was convinced that coffee and cocoa were highly underpriced products of the soil. Cocoa, he thought, is an agricultural product with good associations. Coffee and cocoa were both grown only in the tropics. Through an acquaintance in the shop, Sam learned of the commodity exchanges, where products of every kind were bought and sold by both those who utilized the products and those who merely speculated were invested on the rise or fall of prices. By making a few phone calls, he learned the name of a commodity man at the largest brokerage house in the city. After a few cordial conversations with the broker, during which he learned the rudiments of speculating in cocoa, Sam the speculator was anxious to cash in on his hunch. The broker told him that a minimum amount of $5,000 would be required. Anxious as the young man was, he did not rush over with the money. For several days, he just phoned the broker to get the opening and closing prices and ask a few new questions. Finally, the broker pushed him a little. He suggested that the market appeared ready to rise and told Sam to get his deposit in an account. That evening, the speculator decided to go to the safe and withdraw $5,000 cash. In the morning, he failed to open the bookstore for the first time in 3 years. Instead, the cash was converted into traveler's checks in six separate banks. Sam thought this would throw the tax people off should they be following his cash flow. He also did not want to alarm the broker. The exchange at each bank went well, with the exception of the fourth transaction, where the teller asked Sam why the money had such a peculiar smell. He acted dumb, muttering something about a trip to Spain, while remembering that the years in the safe had probably caused his dough to mildew. Leaving the bank, he was sure the dumb clerk would report the incident to her superior. He only hoped the supervisor had become used to mildewed bills in this time of inflation, when many people were removing their stashes from little corners of the world. You know, it's interesting. I wrote this 30 years ago, and it's kind of more current today than it was in the 1960s or 70s, I think, when I wrote this. It's good writing. I like it. If I like it, you like it. If I like it, it's good writing. So anyway, I'm going to read one more page from The Speculator, from Train Tracks. Then we'll go back to normal programming, which is always abnormal. As I'll go on now from Train Tracks. After the final transaction of traveler's checks into the cashier's check, a brief subway ride took him to the center of world finance. Following a few directionless meanderings, he found the brokerage house. It occupied an entire city block, was of brown glass and steel, and rose higher than any other building in the district. The young man felt better about his decision when he surveyed the magnitude of the structure. New thoughts came pouring from his brain. So that's how such buildings come to be, he was thinking. Men buy and sell and buy all over the world, and this company takes a commission whether the investors make or lose. Either way, the brokerage houses profit, he thought. He was amused by the cleverness of the scheme, but still felt positive about his decision to, quote, get into it, as he weaved his way through a maze of people in the lobby who were glued to changing stock prices flashing above their heads. At once, he no longer sneered at these people. He understood them. He was part of them for the first time. Ah, those phony artist friends of his would not need to know about his new attitude towards them. It would be sufficient that at last he was part of reality. Once on the 27th floor, he found his way to the commodity broker. They both acted intimate with one another, as though through the telephone conversations, they had discovered they were brothers. and were now at last meeting for the first time since their separation at an orphanage. For a while, they both just sat and watched the gigantic board where prices for wheat, corn, soybeans, live cattle, hog bellies, coffee, cocoa, silver, platinum, and other items clicked and changed with mechanical excitement. Sam noticed that the broker was not alone before the big board. He was one of a dozen or so brokers in the large and well-designed room. As the young man casually glanced at the other faces, the cigarette-stained fingers of this very thin broker tapped nervously on his desk. The thin man whispered, "You see that man in the back at the last desk? He earned over $1 million last year just in trading cocoa." The young man was impressed but not astonished. He knew people made that kind of money, and here was one of them in the flesh. That the million-dollar earner did not look different from anybody else made him all the more believable. As the young man imagined what the rich man's home and wife looked like, the kind of dinners prepared for them by their cook, and the manner in which they entertained themselves, he asked the broker almost in a whisper, "He makes that much just from speculating in cocoa?" The thin, nervous broker educated him. No. "We are not allowed to speculate for our own accounts. He makes that on commissions alone. He is the man who handles the Hershey account. He buys and sells all their cocoa for them." So that's how they get their chocolate. Sam felt much more involved with the real world than ever before. He realized that soon he would be participating in the buying and selling of chocolate, just as this international corporation did from right there in that office, simply by having his broker watch the changing figures. He gave the check to his broker and watched him walk with it to an accounting office at the far end of the room and placed it in a pneumatic tube. Jim, the broker, returned and said, "It's done. Down the tubes by now. Your account number is 0137. The young man was made a bit nervous by the broker's choice of words, but he immediately realized the expression, "down the tubes," probably originated in such investment houses to describe the passage of messages, checks, through pneumatic tubes which traversed the building. He further reassured himself by repeating the many names of the partners of the famous company. I'll pause right now. It's about 30 pages more. The Speculator in a Garden of Numbers from my masterpiece, Train Tracks. You're listening to The Savage Nation. I'll be right back.
Savage.
That's the sound of people throwing out their old dehumidifiers. They've replaced them with a computerized wave ventilation unit. Wave ventilation expels moisture, gases, and toxins that are trapped in your basement or crawl space and replaces it with drier, fresher air. Wave ventilation requires no maintenance. There are no buckets to empty or filters to change. And compared to a dehumidifier, it will save you hundreds of dollars each year in energy costs.
I recently installed a unit and was stunned by the difference. I had a dehumidifier for almost 20 years without ever getting rid of that musty smell. Now, the smell is finally gone.
Say goodbye to your dehumidifier and get a wave unit for your home.
For free information, go to dryhousenow.com or call 888-964-WAVE. Satisfaction guaranteed. Just go to dryhousenow.com or call 888-964-WAVE.
Wave Home Solutions for a healthy, comfortable home.
Do you have unfiled tax returns or owe the IRS or state more than $10,000? If you don't take action now, your tax problem is going to get worse, much worse. Seizure of property, bank levies, wage garnishments, and potential criminal prosecution. And if you owe the IRS back payroll taxes, chances are you will be visited at your home or business by an IRS agent. Don't become paralyzed by fear. Take action now. Call the experts at U.S. Tax Shield for help. Our team of experienced tax attorneys can get you protected, stop collection, and negotiate a permanent settlement with the IRS state, potentially saving you thousands of dollars. At U.S. Tax Shield, our tax advisors will review your case for free, inform you of your rights, and give you a guaranteed quote. No games and no tricky upsells. That's why we have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau and thousands of satisfied clients. Put an end to your torment. Get protected. Get the shield. Call U.S. Tax Shield now at 800-299-1855. That's 800-299-1855. 800-299-1855.
They say every car on the road is a used car, which means every car at the curb or in the garage is an unused car, and a lot of times it's an unwanted car, too. If you have one of those, then why not donate it to the Cancer Fund of America? Just call 800-321-3023, where live operators are available 7 days a week. We'll pick up your car, running or not in most cases, and do all the DMV and smog paperwork. Of course, you're eligible for a charitable tax deduction, plus the great feeling you'll get knowing your car is going to help support the Cancer Fund. All you have to do is call that phone number, 800-321-3023, to set the wheels in motion, literally. We take cars, trucks, vans, boats, RVs. Listen, if it used to carry you around and it doesn't need oats, call the number, 800-321-3023. The Cancer Fund of America needs you, and there are thousands of people who need the Cancer Fund of America. So call today, 800-321-3023. Thanks.
Diamonds, the gift that lasts forever, and there's never been a better time to buy. Worldwide diamond prices have gone up. The Jewelry Exchange has a large stock of diamonds at the old prices. The Jewelry Exchange has certified 1-carat round and fancy solitaires for $18.90. 1 to 2-carat non-certifieds are just $9.90 per carat, and 1-carat studs are just $3.99. The Jewelry Exchange has thousands of GIA diamonds, guaranteed the lowest price. We have the hottest designer lines in micro pave, invisible, and platinum, and set in size while you watch. Diamond floating heart pendants with 33 full-cut diamonds are $99. 4-carat diamond and amethyst pendant and earring sets are just $99. The Jewelry Exchange has thousands of rings, bracelets, earrings, and pendants guaranteed to appraise for double. That's right, double. Some restrictions apply. Plus no interest for 6 months. Buy factory direct and save. The Jewelry Exchange in Redwood City, 650-367-6500. That's 650-367-6500. Or shop at jewelryexchange.com.
Whether it's fame, power, sex, or an Italian aria, nothing tantalizes like the thrill of seduction. San Francisco Opera turns up the heat with Puccini's simmering Tosca. This tempestuous tale of ambition and obsession exposes the darker side of the human heart and reveals the stunning sensuality of Puccini's score.
Hello, I'm David Goffley, General Director of San Francisco Opera, inviting you to experience Tosca. Music director Nicola Luisotti leads two scintillating casts featuring two transcendent divas, Angela Gheorghiu and Patricia Racette. You may even want to check both of them out. I'll see you there.
Now through December 2nd. For tickets, call 415-864-3330 or visit sfopera.com today.
Weekdays at 3.
There are no checks on these people right now. If you're sitting on the fence, wake the hell up!
Mark Levin.
You're losing your country.
On Hot Talk 560 KSFO.
It's Black Friday, so let's step back and relax a little from the hustle and bustle with some more stories from the Savage Nation. Gather around the radio. Let's start with cleaning bronzes in the basement. Thanks for listening and enjoy the day. My dad, God rest his soul, owned a small antique store on the Lower East Side of New York. And he specialized in 19th century French bronzes. And they were gorgeous. And I learned a lot about art because I stared at them all day long. Now, you may say, oh, what do you know about art? I know a lot about art, believe me. Trust me, I probably know more than the art historian of your choice. So these figures would come in with a brown or black patina, which is the accumulation over the ages. And it was gorgeous, the patina. But the nouveaus who were buying the figures to turn them into lamps wanted them to look like gold because underneath the patina was the original bronze color. So, okay, all right, Ben, I'll take that, I'll turn it into a lamp, you know, mount the thing, blah, blah, blah. So they'd buy it, and a certain number would be left for the weekend, and I'd have to clean them in the basement, down into the pit, dirty, horrible, dank, huge old wine barrels, a toilet from hell, no mirror on the wall except speckled from the acid that hit the mirror. I'm down there from, I don't know what age, 14, 12, 15, I don't remember, with a toothbrush. There was only one other guy he would hire to do it, this guy named Louis from the Bowery. Nobody else in history would do this. Get rubber gloves up to my elbows, and you would drop these white pellets into water, turn it into a cyanide solution. And then you would take the brush, and you'd rub the figure until the patina came off the bronze. And I'm rubbing it. It would take you an hour to do each one or two. Rub, and you're a kid. You're rubbing, and what you're thinking about is where you're going to go that night. You're going out on a date, or you're going to hang out with your friends, you're going to drag race, whatever. Meanwhile, my face would be blotched. And I'm rubbing and cleaning, and it's like a Dickens basement. So one day, so I go into high school chemistry, and I said to my teacher, I told him what I was doing. I was using cyanide balls. My father had a huge chemical supply. No, he was not used for anything but this. And
I said to the teacher, I use these cyanide balls for a cleaning solution. They said, what? So I went, it's poisonous, he said to me. They use cyanide balls at San Quentin to kill people. But he said, don't get worried. There's a sodium cyanide and then there's a potassium cyanide salt. So I said, really? Oh, this is very much like Abraham slew Isaac. So I went to my dad and I said, do you know that they use cyanide to kill people at, you know, with the gas? He said, yeah, but that's the other one. I'm giving you the correct ion. I said, oh, thanks, Dad. That was close. You know, it was definitely out of the Bible. You got to understand that the context of this story is like, oh, he put the knife to the throat, but he didn't cut it because God said use potassium cyanide, not sodium cyanide. Now, to this day, I don't know which one kills you. So that's it. Now, if you look back upon it, this is a side note. I swear to God, if you're a doctor listening to this show or a trained scientist, I want you to think about what I'm going to say. Is it possible that inhaling the fumes that didn't kill you outright in some way mitted against the fatty foods collecting in my arteries? I have a pet theory that in some way, although it blotched my face, it built up my immunity to something. I know it did.
This is the Savage Nation. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282.
Who's watching your home when you're not there? It could be a burglar. Burglars prefer to break in when they think no one is home, and no one will stop them. Don't be an easy target for intruders. Protect your home with a free security system monitored by ADT, the leader in home security. Call now and get free hardware, free medical and fire alert, and free activation. It's an $850 value. Call right now and you'll also get 6 free sensors. That's 6 points of protection for free. Just call Protect Your Home, your authorized ADT dealer, at 1-888-987-3232. You'll get 24-hour protection, and there's no cost for parts or activation. Call now about a free security system monitored by ADT. Call 1-888-987-3232. $99 installation charge, 36-month monitoring agreement at $35.99 per month. Total package includes 6 door window sensors. Labor charges may apply. Call for terms and conditions to this offer and Protect Your Home license numbers. Call now, 1-888-987-3232.
Good evening, I'm Dave Fowkes, Hot Talk 560 KSFO. Walmart says no one was injured in a frenzy over a Black Friday deal at one of its stores in South Georgia. A video of the incident circulating online says a large crowd of people pushing, yelling, and grabbing boxes off a shelf at the store in Moultrie. A memorial service will be held tomorrow for the 22-year-old man shot and killed by two men during a crime spree in San Jose last week. The man's family has set up a fund to help with burial costs. And Salinas police have arrested two brothers on suspicion of trying to kill a homeless man outside the restaurant they own. The 55-year-old victim was in a coma, but police say he's recovering. KSFO traffic, northbound 680 at Rudgear. Looks like we've got a stalled car. Should be off to the center divide now. Westbound 80 as you get past the metering lights. Looks like a stalled car also should be off to the left side now. And southbound 242 at Grant Street. Stalled car being reported. I'm Dave Fowkes, Hot Talk 560 KSFO.
There is nothing wrong with being nude.
When news breaks, hear it.
It was clear there was no demonstration.
Talk about.
One thing is clear. Doing nothing is not an option.
A fiscal shock of that size would send the economy toppling back into recession.
Right here.
That she has fired Cal coach Jeff Tepper.
General Petraeus changed the way that our military fights.
General Petraeus' briefing was comprehensive.
Israel has the right to defend itself and has the right to decide how best to defend itself.
Hot Talk 560 KSFO.
Want department store mattress selection at warehouse store prices? At Mattress Discounters, you always get unbeatable prices on the same mattress brands found at department stores, like Serta Perfect Sleeper, Posturepedic, and Stearns & Foster. No other store will save you money like Mattress Discounters, because no other store has our lowest price or its free guarantee. Look for the red tag and save big at Mattress Discounters.
Have a good night's sleep for less. Mattress Discounters.
As a small business owner, you've probably heard how Constant Contact helps small businesses grow with email marketing. And you may be asking, could it really work for me? Well, consider this. Every dollar small business owners spend on email marketing puts $40 back in their pockets. So it's no surprise that 2 out of 3 of them plan to invest more in email this year. Now you may be asking, how can I get a piece of that action? Simple. Just visit ConstantContact.com to start your free email marketing trial today.
Relax, it's the holidays. Take a load off and join us this Saturday from noon until 1 on KSFO to hear strategies on how to protect your wealth and build wealth safely. The Ask Mr. Annuity Show is your roadmap to retirement. Mr. Annuity, he has the answers on all things retirement, from immediate annuity to tax-free retirement to income for life strategies. Tune in this Saturday from noon until 1 on KSFO. For more information, go to AskMrAnnuity.com. That's AskMrAnnuity.com.
Where did everybody go?
They saw my truck and ran for it.
Who are you?
I'm a Pacific Coast termite inspector, and you're toast.
Why's that?
Because we're the leading orange oil specialist in California. A quick and easy way to eradicate termites for those who don't want a tent.
These guys are cheap, cheap, cheap.
Oh, it's much less than you think. And after 20,000 home treatments, Pacific Coast has a perfect Better Business Bureau rating.
What does eradicate mean?
Call Pacific Coast Termite today for your free inspection and estimate at 800-PACIFIC. That's 800-722-4342. Pacific Coast Termite also eliminates rodents and repairs any damage to your home. And if you call right now, we'll take an additional 10% off the termite or rodent treatment and any necessary structural repairs. And all work is guaranteed and backed with a 2-year warranty. Call Pacific Coast Termite today for your free inspection and estimate at 800-PACIFIC. That's 800-PACIFIC. Or visit PacificCoastTermite.com. Free inspection applies to homes not for sale or in escrow.
You don't want to be a termite. No, when Pacific Coast Termite's around.
Conservative, but not mad about it. Join the discussion with Governor Mike Huckabee. Weekdays at 9 till noon on Hot Talk 560 KSFO.
Music because, first of all, I'd like to be there right now, truthfully. But I'm going to wait it out. I'm going to go in January, maybe. Great place. It's a great place. Great. I lived there for a number of years, you know. You know what it's like for a kid from New York to go, like, to wind up in Hawaii? I'd never been in a place like that. It was unbelievable. It was like walking into, like, a heaven itself. So anyway, to make a long story short, we're talking about a turn it off now, a long time ago. You know, when you land in heaven, you think you can do anything, and you have hubris. Hubris is a sense of confidence that only children and the mad have and can understand. But when a grown-up has hubris, it becomes very dangerous, and in my case, that was true. So you get to the islands, and it's a magical time. You never saw sunsets like this. They can break your heart. When you see plumeria blossoms lying on the, you know, I used to bicycle up to the university. I would see plumeria blossoms lying on the sidewalk. I would stop the bicycle and pick up the plumeria blossoms and look at them and smell them. And I'd never seen anything like this. Sure, I had seen rose petals on the fence in the Bronx when I was a little kid. They were soft and beautiful. But this was something unique. The scent was unlike anything I had ever experienced. And so you see these sunsets and these sunrises and all of these things that you have never seen, and birds in the jungles in the back of the rainforest that you never saw or heard before. And you start to get tuned into your own body in a way you've never been tuned in. If you've never lived in the tropics and it's the first time, and you start shedding clothing and shoes and leather and you put it all away, and now you're in flip-flops and then you're in shorts, and all of a sudden at night the breeze comes through your sleeves and you start to become alive in a new way, and you go in the warm water. So you start to feel like the original man. And you buy a sailboat. It's the first thing you do. And so I bought a sloop-rigged boat. She was not catch-rigged. I was mistaken. I remember now. Tirangi was a sloop-rigged sailing vessel about 22 feet long. And it was made of white oak, primarily. And it was, had been built in Oregon and sailed out by somebody else to Hawaii. I bought it for nothing, you know, next to nothing. She was in perfect shape and no engine, as I said. So I buy this boat. I put it into the Alawai Yacht Harbor. And that's where I kept it. And, you know, most people who own boats mainly use them to drink on and hang out. And it's as good a thing to do as any. But I was foolish enough to actually want to sail the boat, even though I knew nothing about sailing. And I took it out without an engine. I knew it was pretty easy to get out because the wind was prevailing out of the yacht harbor. And I said, wow, this is great. And so I, you know, with a few friends, I was on a boat alone. They just cast me off, released the lines, pushed me backwards. And there we go, down the Alawai Channel, out into the channel and out into the ocean. I was zipping along with the sail out, and I was zipping along out onto sea, and there I was. I said, this is super. I'm really enjoying myself. Then I realized I didn't know how to get back. I said, how do I turn this thing around if the wind is blowing out? Well, I didn't know how. And I said, well, I better figure this out, because if this keeps up for a while, I'll soon be out in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, and there'll be no way back at all. I had no flares, no radio, no engine. All I had was confidence that was bordering on the insane. So the first thing I did was I resorted to common sense, and I dropped the sails, because that, of course, would cut the motion of the boat. I dropped the sails, and using the tiller, I turned the boat around, you know, flip-flop, flip-flop, until I got the boat pointing back towards the land. And then I figured if the wind is blowing against me, there must be a way to go into a prevailing wind and still move against it. I've seen other people do it. And little by little, and lo and behold, I was able to, luckily, I don't know whether it was current or God's hand itself pushed me back into the harbor, but I learned quickly that sailing is not for the amateur. That's all there was to it. So those days are over. But she was my first boat. I don't have a life ring from Tarangi because I didn't even have a life ring. I don't even think I had a life preserver. You know, those were the age, that was an age when people had total, like, madness about what they could do and accomplish in the late 60s. But now I drive a power boat, and it has all sorts of safety equipment on it. Sure, not enough that I should have. But I like power boats a lot better because they're easier to get out. I can get this thing on the way. It's 45 feet, twin diesels, 19 tons, unladen with fuel and water, and I can go out on it alone and come back on it alone in almost any wind. And that's the good part. You can get out in 12, 15 minutes, and there it is. It's just you and the birds and the water and the land, and that's it. And that's what I go out for now, is just to look at the water and look at the birds and look at the landforms, mainly, and the seals I like. And I can name every bird on the bay. More or less, I know every bird on the bay as a species. Not by name, not like, how you doing, howdy. I don't mean that. Species-wise, come to understand that every animal has a personality. Isn't this strange? It's not that the PETA folks are correct. I still eat animals. But they all have a personality when you get to know them. And they all want to live. Dad taught me that everything wants to live. That's how he taught me to respect human life. He said, you'll notice that a cat wants to live, a dog wants to live, a rat wants to live, a mouse wants to live, a bird wants to live. And he had learned that when he had accidentally shot a bird. As a kid, remember, this is odd to a country boy listening to the show. It sounds very weak. But remember, I'm a New York City boy. And to us, it's a different experience than it is to you guys. I respect your ability to hunt for your food. But every animal actually has a personality when you get to know that animal. They're all different. Just as we're all different, every human is unique and like a snowflake. Well, guess what? So are animals. They're all unique. It's amazing when you come to understand that. I want to talk about something entirely different right now, and that is the death of pets. Let me explain why. I have said that you can pretty well gauge a society by how it treats its dogs and cats. We are the most humane society on earth with regard not only to how we treat our dogs and cats, but how we treat each other. The least humane societies on earth, for example, have the Islamo-Qadsis, who think nothing of cutting off a person's head while chanting to Allah while the person is living. I can't imagine what they do with dogs and cats. Now, the reason I mention this is because my poor little dog, Snowy, is going to die. Now, this is not Teddy, my current dog, but this is my last dog, Snowy, the Border Collie. She's 16 years old, and 3 years ago, if you remember, she became quite feeble. I couldn't take care of her, and people said, well, just, you know, euthanize her. I said, no, she's not ready for death. And we found some good, kind folks up near the Russian River who took her in. She's had 3 beautiful years, and she got better, you know, living on their little farm. And she became the queen of the other dogs. They loved her. And, well, she's gotten sick, very sick. So we went up, took a long ride. And, you know, she was lying in the grass, and her eyes were glazed over. It was really sad. I mean, what can I say to you? You know, it's a pet. She's a big part of my life, and I just feel a little whacked out. I mean, I love the dog, but she didn't die. I mean, I whistled to her, and I talked to her, and I said, come on, let's go for a run, you know. And she tried it, you know, run in the feet and this and that. But I thought about how compassionate we are to our animals, how we can empathize with an animal, and how these animals on the other side of the world can't even empathize with human beings. And I said, what kind of religion permits these kind of people to live. I don't want to hear anymore that Islam is a religion of peace. If Islam was a religion of peace, they should all stand up and say a pox upon their house, and we want them dead. But we never hear that. In fact, we hear the opposite. The Islamo-Qazis from France to Britain to America to Canada warn us that we're next. They warn us that we're next. And we sit here like the sheeple that we are, waiting to be put down like my dog Snowy on a grassy lawn. And the reason is because for 30 years now, the men in this country have been beaten to death by the radical feminists who have tried to beat masculinity out of the society. Now, fortunately, they're the ones who lost. Any boy who showed the sign of manhood was given Ritalin. Any little boy who showed the sign of testosterone was turned into a girl. 30 years of this, so our politicians reflect the capon, not the rooster. Our politicians represent the capon, not the rooster. And that's what's happened. They think we want them to sound like that, like a capon, like a gelding. And only when we get stallions back in office will this country be well again. And we will. We're going to beat the Islamo-Qazis. We're going to lose some people. There's no question in my mind we're going to lose people in this country because of the geldings in office. But then the stallions will arise and we'll crush them. And they won't be seen for 1,000 years. But I want to talk for a moment about how we treat our pets. I don't know where to go with this. I mean, I just got a note that she didn't die on Saturday. She just laid there breathing heavily, and then we took her in and this and that. I didn't know what to do with her. But she was very peaceful, and you know, when I left her on the lawn, I mean, when I left the house, the little place where she is, I said, you know, we should all be so lucky as to lie down in the grass in the cool shade surrounded by people who love us when it's the end of our life. It's a part of the cycle of life. But we love our animals, don't we? We lavish care and love upon our animals because we're kind people and it's a generous society. It's a generous society and a kind society that has been tempered by Christianity and Judaism primarily into this kind of society. Now, perhaps we have gone too far. And perhaps the Islamo-Qazis think that we're weak because we're kind. Now, I called Snowy for years my little angel with fur. I even wrote a poem to her. I think it went like, first to rise, I don't know, who the heck knows? I don't want to get maudlin, I don't know what to say. You want me to start hammering the imams? You want me to deal with Muslims and radical Islam? Let the president do it. Let the CIA do it. Let the FBI do it. That's what I pay him for, that's what you pay him for. I'm not doing it anymore. They have the Secret Service. They have the machine guns. I have nothing. I have Drek to protect me. You turn to them for it. Demand more out of your leadership. Don't ask me to say it anymore. I have enough of the scum, the domestic scum threatening me. And the external scum threatening me. Turn to your FBI and CIA and your geldings in office and let them say a word about Islamofascism. Don't look to me to do it. I'm through with it. So that's all I want to say right now.
Savage.
One little joint supplement. You know this powerful little pill is great for your joints, it's great for your cartilage, it even has powerful benefits to help increase your mobility and flexibility. But the joint supplements of today are sadly incomplete because they don't start relieving joint discomfort immediately. Until now. Introducing the complimentary 2-week sample of fast-acting Instaflex, our most powerful joint formula ever. It can start relieving joint discomfort in just a few days. The only thing our complimentary sample of Instaflex is missing is the price. Because right now, we're offering adults a complimentary 2-week sample as part of a nationwide giveaway. Call and claim your sample today. 1-800-946-9745. Great for your knees, hands, even your hips. Fast-acting Instaflex can start relieving joint discomfort in just a few days. Instaflex is available at GNC, Rite Aid Pharmacies, and Vitamin World, where you can only get your complimentary 2-week sample by calling 1-800-946-9745. Call now for your 2-week Instaflex sample. 1-800-946-9745.
What are you going to do with your old car? You can try selling it, you could junk it, or you can donate it to Heritage for the Blind. Your car will be towed away for free, and your donation is tax deductible. Just call 1-800-895-8035. Heritage for the Blind accepts cars, vans, trucks, and boats. It doesn't matter if your vehicle runs or not. It will be towed away for free, and you'll be supporting those that need help. Heritage for the Blind is a nonprofit organization that helps the visually impaired live fuller lives. Call right now to donate your car, and as a special thank you, you'll receive a free 3-day vacation voucher to over 50 locations. Call Heritage for the Blind right now. Call 1-800-895-8035. Donating is easy, and your vehicle is towed away for free. Plus, you'll get a free vacation voucher for donating. Call now, 1-800-895-8035. That's 1-800-895-8035.
Sean Hannity.
The thrill of victory.
Oh, I will admit.
And the agony of defeat.
It kind of hit me this weekend. Just kind of caught up to me. Bam! Ow! I woke up this morning. I felt great. It just evaporated. I'm ready to fight again.
Weekdays at noon.
I'm not going down the road of depressed and wringing my hands and woe is me, because in life, you've got to add perspective to things. Now, you can't lose an election and not be concerned. That's not panic, though.
On Hot Talk 560 KSFO.
He wakes up, sniffs around, looks for great deals all over town. He's Sweet Jack, Sweet Jack. SweetJack.com. He searches in all places. Really hot deals are what he chases. To get the best deals in your inbox, that's why he rocks. He's Sweet Jack. He's Sweet Jack. He's Sweet Jack. SweetJack.com.
If you are being audited by the IRS, or the IRS or state is threatening to garnish your wages or bank accounts, you need a team of experienced tax attorneys on your side. I'm tax attorney Robert Goldstein, and my firm understands how difficult it is to navigate through the tax system. That is why we put our 28 years of combined experience to work for each and every client. It is our goal to reach the best possible result, including working on minimizing tax bills and avoiding negligence or fraud penalties. Every year, we have helped our clients save millions of dollars through our audit representation, offering compromise settlements, and bankruptcy. The IRS is acting more aggressively than it has in years, and you should have someone experienced on your side looking out for your best interest. The law offices of Robert Goldstein are a local firm with offices exclusively in the Bay Area, and we always offer a free consultation. To schedule your free attorney-client consultation with me, call toll-free 1-888-TAX-EXIT. That's 888-TAX-EXIT, 888-TAX-EXIT, and make us your last stop.
Securities and advisory services offered through NPC, member FINRA and SIPC, a registered investment advisor. Vitucci & Associates Insurance Services and NPC are separate and unrelated companies. Brian Sussman is not an NPC representative.
So what happens to your finances if the fiscal cliff hits on January 1st? I'm Brian Sussman. I'm concerned about it. How about you? One guy who could help with all this is Pat Vitucci, a Bay Area independent financial advisor. The Bush tax cuts could vanish. Estate taxes drastically changed. Automatic federal spending. Well, these cuts could affect jobs and services. We could be looking at a fiscal tsunami. The question is, are you and your investments prepared? As an independent advisor with 15 Bay Area offices, Pat Vitucci can probably help you. Call him anytime for a complimentary consultation. 800-472-8305. 800-472-8305. And check out don'tinvestandforget.com for upcoming seminars. Pat Vitucci at 800-472-8305.
This is the number one talk station in the Bay Area. Strong, loud, and always conservative. Hot Talk 560 KSFO.
I need to get into a third world frame of mind. Oh, that's so much better. I read that Big Brother's education ministry is seeking to prove that a nation was founded not by Christians who were following Judeo-Christian thoughts and ideas, but actually it could be that America was founded on Hindu philosophy, Hindu and Buddhist philosophy. In fact, most of the Buddhists in America who know nothing about Buddhism, the converts, I mean, the former, you know, hippie liberals who are all, they like to put their hands in front of their bodies when they go into Asian restaurants and ask for a glass of water or a napkin. They think that makes them a Buddhist. And they bow to the owner who looks at them like they're insane. They actually believe that the pilgrims were not actually from England. There is some proof emerging from the Department of Education that the pilgrims actually were on a long journey from the Bay of Bengal. They stopped in England, it's true, for a while, and they donned English costumes. But in fact, the pilgrims were Hindus. And so this idea that we're a Judeo-Christian nation also has to be rethought. In the new re-education camp of Big Brother, everything is on the table. You thought that there was a free market? It's free for Dianne Feinstein and the bankers of Wall Street. You thought the country was built on Christian values? You're wrong. There are no Christian values. There may not even be a Christianity. That could be a fantasy also. And so forth and so on. He had won the victory over himself. He loved Big Brother. Read the last paragraph of George Orwell's 1984 and weep in your gin.
Savage.
I got to tell you, I'm somehow influenced sometimes by stories. In other words, if I tell a story about Italy or Italian, I wind up eating Italian food. If that day I'm excited over an Indian story, in India I eat Indian food. I had gone shopping at my local market. I would give out his name. He's a nice guy, but I don't want people to look for me there. And I said, I can't find calamari steaks. So he said, I got them. They're frozen in a box. He took them out of the box for me with a hammer and a knife. He broke them apart. Then he has a machine. He put each one in a like a package that takes the air out and resealed it with the air out of it. And he gave me calamari steaks. It cost me less than $2 a piece. Can you imagine how much they cost even retail? I come home that night. I was in a mood for a calamari steak with mushroom sauce. And I've never had it served with mushroom sauce, but because the other member of the dinner wanted a steak, not calamari, I said, I want to make a mushroom sauce for the first time in my life. So I defrosted the calamari on the cold water. Never use hot water when defrosting virtually anything, because if you use hot water, you're partially cooking it, which is very dangerous. Only defrost using cold water. And then you take the plastic off, okay, then you dry them, blah, blah, blah. You only cook them 3-4 minutes on each side in a very hot pan with very little oil, or else it'll get soggy. And make sure you got a little parsley chopped up. Anyway, I made a mushroom sauce that was so good. No butter, no cream, and I defy you to be able to discern whether there was cream or butter in it. I never had anything like it. I slept like a baby. I woke up feeling like I had velvet between my joints. I felt so good that I figured I needed to feel bad. So last night, I ordered bad Italian food from a local restaurant. It wasn't bad. It's old style, like Bronx, Staten Island, Brooklyn Italian food, which is actually a pleasure compared to the upscale, white tablecloth, shishi, bad Italian food kind of restaurants that you find all over, you know, the suburbs. I'm talking meat sauce that's thick, like really heavy, you know, really heavy, like your grandmother made. Your grandmother, not mine. And I got a meat dish, a veal piccata. Then there was, I always eat the other dish on the table. Have you ever seen this going on in restaurants? This goes on for the last number of years. Like, men are on low-fat diets. I love to watch this in restaurants. Men over, like, 40. So the wife usually orders a meal that she knows her husband wants, and he orders something lean.
I'll have the lean. Yeah, something no salt, and no cream, no butter, no salt. Make it light. Make it light. No cream, no butter.
So he gets this lean dish. She gets this, you know, gut-busting, phenomenal dish on her side, knowing that he's going to pick it up late. And the guy always eats her meal from his side. And she picks at his dish. She eats the lean dish off his plate. And he's every minute, the fork is, the boarding house reach across the table to her dish. I love to watch this. It goes on consistently. So I overindulged. I had nightmares last night from the meat. If I eat meat late, one nightmare after another. I had a nightmare. I was on Broadway in San Francisco in my car, which is a great car, and it wouldn't go forward, only backwards. You ever dream like this? I tried to go forward, and it would go backwards. So I said, I got to get this car parked because I'm leaving for Europe tomorrow. I don't know what I'm doing with Europe. Dreams are crazy. But my whole dream was about getting the car parked safely so that the dealer could pick it up the next day. But I knew if I left it on Broadway, they would tow it away that night in San Francisco. So I tried to back it down a street, and it was all full of coal. Oh, my God, what a horrible dream. So as I drove into San Francisco today, I went down that very street to see if my car would suddenly stop and only go backwards. No, but it turned out it was only a nightmare from the meat. Dad had a small antique store. I told you he sold clocks and figures and statues, mainly 19th century French, and some of it was very good. So amongst the many customers, one of them was a circus performer,
in the freak show of Ringling Brothers, who would get up there, half man, half woman. I don't know. He had a breast on one side, and the other side he didn't. I don't know how they with a half a beard. But, you know, after work, he was a regular person, and he lived in a house in Long Beach, like one of those little Godfather houses. So Dad would deliver the work after work. He delivered his own, you know, sales. He didn't have a delivery boy. And I would, you know, I was the kid. I'd go along on the ride, whether it would be the DeSoto or the Cadillac Model 62 with the statues in the back. And we'd pull up late at night because this guy didn't like to come out during the day. I'll never forget this as long as I live. So the circus guy, the half man, half woman, ring, ring, who's there? Blah, blah, blah. So the guy opens the door, but he can't open the door all the way. He can only open it a crack. Why can he only go? And he has to, like, pull the door and push stuff to get. And the house is now littered with art objects in no particular order. Hundreds of statues and paintings on the floor, nothing hung right. And what was that? Nobody knew. I knew. I was a kid who thought on those long rides out to Long Island and the long rides back, those long winter nights over the Williamsburg Bridge in the car with the sound of the grated metal underneath the tire as your car went over it, looking down from the childhood at the ships that came back from the Korean War with the painting of the LST in the Brooklyn Navy Yard. All the way through to this, I figured out what it was. This guy was a freak. He was ugly in his own mind. So he compensated for his ugliness by buying beauty. And he needed to surround himself with beautiful things as much as possible in a compulsive way.
Warning, The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. And here he is, Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of The Savage Nation.
Black Friday, so let's step back and relax a little from the hustle and bustle with some more stories from the Savage Nation. Today you're going to hear my great story. Well, it's not so great. I was almost lost my life in Spain from a gangster, American gangster in Spain from my newly released Train Tracks. You ready? An American gangster in Spain from Train Tracks. I'll read a few pages of it. Mallorca, Balearic Islands, Spain. The first middle-class bum I met was soon to be a high school principal from Brooklyn who smoked dope, danced the mambo like a Cuban, was with a lot of women, and walked with a minstrel smile at all times. Very dark skin for a Caucasian, and with thick lips and curly hair, he was the Hebraic male version of Abraham's wife, Sarah, set to be comely and black. Anyway, Donnie had just come back from a very faraway place where the wine, women, and danzones were said to flow as freely as an impressionist Paris night. I right then decided to go there. That summer, or as soon as I could afford it, I'd go to Spain and get over to Mallorca. It was a converted troop ship, the motor vessel Waterman, that carried my friend Marty and me on our pilgrimage to Donnie's Paradise Island. 2 years it took me to save up for that trip. When we first escaped our moorings, with deep foghorn vibrations not matched by today's jet wine, all of my past seemed to slip beneath my feet. This was going somewhere. The last person in my family to ride a ship was my father on his immigrant journey to America. Turning around on the stern, drunk with Marty and a couple of hundred other budget-minded travelers, and feeling New York's West Side recede as in a dream, I knew I'd cut the umbilical cord for good. Out to sea and seated for my first meal, I knew the next 10 days would be bad news for food. Cheap German food served by surly waiters not older than you does not make for an appetizing prospect. So I took to sneaking into the first-class lounge each night and heaping the tasty little sandwiches into my raincoat. Those ham and other cold-cut sandwiches beat the sauerkraut and potato soups served in our class. Anyway, I go on from there. It's very interesting, and I'll speed up until I get to Mallorca, when I met the ex-mob boss who eventually threatened my life. We get to Palma, 1966. See, these stories go back. I got to explain this book to you. It started last winter. I went through all of my old stories, and I told my agent, I'd like to see have these stories see the light of day. So I went through them, and here it is. Palma, 1966.
Many of you listening weren't even born yet. Christmas Day in Shotzi's Bar. I've been there since the summer. I was a regular amongst the expats, mainly English retirees living on pensions playing at art. The eggy taste of advocat, a creamy yellow alcoholic slammer, was fashionable in the Mediterranean port bar. One thing I liked about those English writers, they just drank without a wink, devoid of cute American names for their addiction. So again, another season of too much alcohol and of the wrong kind and tasty but suicidal food. Shotzi, wiry and friendly, took a liking to me. One rainy and windy afternoon, after I had motor scooted in the 7 kilos from Arenal, Mallorca, a beach town where I had an apartment, he told me to get off the island. Kitty whispered, his eyes screwed up behind a smoke cloud, "Get out of here, get off this island fast." I was shocked. I thought the crowd in the bar liked me. "Why, what do you mean? Look, you're young, all they want from you," he said, lifting a shoulder in the general direction of the others in that smoky bivouac, "is your money and your woman." Stunned, I looked around that tank full of human flesh. Were these angels and guppies really piranhas beneath deceptive markings? Over there at the end of the mahogany counter, his legs twisted over one another like a rubber man, an Ichabod crane, a drunken grin radiating from his fixed jaw, was an English nature poet little known beyond that grave circle. Nah, couldn't be him. He was too drunk and too kind all the time. Collapsed on a bench along the right wall after cursing out some old lady who dared say Merry Christmas was a loudmouthed Irish novelist whose latest had just appeared as a film. His pretty kindly wife and their 3-month baby were like a quiet painting next to him, she nursing the infant while her husband slept off his latest drunk. Nah, definitely not them. Too honest. Well, the Americans in the bar, sure. Highly suspect and therefore no threat. That left only Max, the ex-mob boss on the run who I thought had befriended me. Yeah. The more I thought about him, the more I began to believe Shotzi. Listen, I know this doesn't seem real to you, but I tell you, you're in danger. My eyebrows arched and he ordered a free advocate for me. Max Roachman first attracted my attention because of his heavy New York accent. As I thought about it, it was Carla who was first drawn to him. I remember her saying with that tee-hee little giggle of hers, "You remind me of my father." Oh, that little. He had us up to his place after that first night. His Spanish maid, a quiet old lady, cooked an authentic spread. Brought over by successive waves of colonizers, the Arabs, Berbers, and Moors, fruits are very prevalent, and they accompany most courses on Mallorca. We began with local wine soaked in sangria, the fruits coming from Maxi's own trees. Standing on the stone terrace and eyes wandering up to Arenal Palace, I felt very much at home. His lousy record player was turning the memory years, 1925 to 1950, as this stocky old tough spluttered on about his wild days. Well, what harm would it do for me to drink his wine and eat his food? Well, nothing. I'd only lose my money and my woman, perhaps, maybe my life. Chomping on my first boar with potatoes and artichokes, I listened as the old guy reminisced. He sees me smirking and jumps up. "Here, you don't believe me?" And he rummages through some old photo albums, his maid looking on from the archway with a sad, knowing look. Headline: King of the Hobos has penny rail pass, travels only first class. He is shaking hands with railroad officials. Next picture: two dark-haired sisters, one on each side of Max in a nightclub. Took them both home for 4 days. Next: Max smiling in an auto showroom, shaking hands with a happy salesman who just sold him a Jaguar Mark V and a Jaguar XK120. A good time, kid. But my wife got mad when I didn't come back home for 9 months. We eat the paella valenciana, all the seafood fresh from then clean bays. The phono spins off speed. Over flan and coffee, he worked himself up to his true confession. A small news article tells us about his first murders, two boys in a train yard. Then with a flourish, he shows me a letter from then New York Mayor Bob Wagner, inquiring about Max's recent operation. "I got friends, kid. The books, record suits, coat, shoes. I sneak a peek into his closets on the way to the bathroom. All from friends. Some items delivered by visiting U.S. warships, if we are to believe this old crook." "What happened?" I ask him. "I can't go back. That's all, kid. It's all over now." The memory years spinning off speed. "Too much, kid. I was too young." But this story came to a bad end. They're not quite at that dinner party. I must have known that good old Maxie was fiddling with my girl because days later, I decided to get past his housemate and snoop around his flat to find material for a story I decided to write about him. Against the maid's pleading will and unbelieving eyes, I talked my way around her objections, saying that Max had given me permission to reread a scrapbook. I don't remember what I found, but I did invade the man's privacy and was nearly killed as a result. Served me right, I suppose. But I guess Max had a shred of compassion left inside somewhere. Days after Shotzi gave me that warning to get off the island, I would see Max everywhere I went. Sitting in a restaurant or a cafe, or wherever I would be, there would be Max, staring at me, or visibly pointing me out to some of the notorious Guardia Civil, who we had heard would kill for $50, the going fee. That was it. I got the message. Shotzi was right. I left. Oh, by the way, I almost forgot to mention what kept him imprisoned in his little bar. He told me this on the day he warned me to leave and start a life for myself while I was still young. He said to me, look, me, I can't go anywhere, he told me, his melancholic puppy eyes wet with emotion and smoke. It was my big night. I was lead dancer in London's biggest ballet. The performance was on. It was my call. I froze in the wings. I was finished. Here I am forever. That story is an American gangster in Spain from my new collection of stories entitled Train Tracks, available everywhere. I'm Michael Savage. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Hello, this is Ty Bollinger, author of the best-selling book, Cancer, Step Outside the Box. I want you to know some very important information. In 1985, President Ronald Reagan requested that Carnivora be sent directly to the White House at a time when only the president could obtain this world-class healer. Now, 27 years later, Carnivora capsules are used around the world to keep people healthy. Now you can protect yourself and your loved ones in this age of superbugs with 17 naturally occurring compounds that instinctively respond to abnormal cells only without harming a single normal cell. If you want to stay healthy, now's your chance to literally wake up your critical immune cells to attack harmful invaders that don't belong in your body. Call 1-866-VENUS-FLY or order from carnivora.com. That's carnivora.com. That's 1-866-836-8735, 1-866-VENUS-FLY, or visit carnivora.com. Protect your immune system. It's the only one you've got.
That's the sound of people throwing out their old dehumidifiers. They've replaced them with a computerized Wave Ventilation Unit. Wave Ventilation expels moisture, gases, and toxins that are trapped in your basement or crawl space and replaces it with drier, fresher air. Wave Ventilation requires no maintenance. There are no buckets to empty or filters to change. And compared to a dehumidifier, it will save you hundreds of dollars each year in energy costs.
I recently installed a unit and was stunned by the difference. I had a dehumidifier for almost 20 years without ever getting rid of that musty smell. Now, the smell is finally gone.
Say goodbye to your dehumidifier and get a Wave unit for your home.
For free information, go to dryhousenow.com or call 888-964-WAVE. Satisfaction guaranteed. Just go to dryhousenow.com or call 888-964-WAVE.
Wave Home Solutions for a healthy, comfortable home.
Sean Hannity.
I'm like the adult who buys you liquor when you're underage.
You're like the neighbor who cuts up the Nerf ball that lands in your yard.
It's kind of true. Look, we're not going to win unless we are better at communicating why it's better for people to eat broccoli than, you know, sit in front of the video machine all day and not have to do their homework, and they get to stay up late at night and go to parties as late as they want and watch TV.
Weekdays from noon till 3 on Hot Talk 560 KSFO.
An important message from Medicare. It's Medicare Open Enrollment, now through December 7th. Time to compare plans. Happy with your current one? You can always keep it, but it never hurts to look. And check out the preventive benefits you get after the healthcare law, with no co-pays or deductibles, like a yearly wellness visit. Savings, too, like over 50% off brand-name prescriptions in the donut hole. Medicare Open Enrollment. Now's the time. Visit Medicare.gov or call 1-800-MEDICARE.
Only the Home Depot has Kiddo worry-free smoke alarms from just $24.97. A sealed lithium battery keeps these alarms working for 10 years so you never change batteries. With four models for specific rooms in your home, like a lighted hallway alarm or voice alert bedroom alarm, upgrade your smoke alarms and set your worries aside for 10 years. Kiddo worry-free smoke alarms starting at just $24.97. More saving, more doing. That's the power of the Home Depot. U.S. only. See store for details.
Get the latest news and information from your favorite radio station on Facebook. Become a fan of Hot Talk 560 KSFO on Facebook and get the news and views you won't hear anywhere else. Fans of our Facebook page can view and post event pictures, receive station updates, and share their opinions with us and other KSFO fans. Fans are also eligible to win prizes, only available on Facebook. To become a fan, go to Facebook.com/560KSFO and click like.
Your home, your authorized ADT dealer at 1-888.
If you're angry at, quote, the rich, that's not freedom.
John Hannity.
And with every penny they transfer in wealth, so goes the freedom of every American.
On Hot Talk 560 KSFO.
If you're driving, texting, checking Facebook, or returning emails and we catch you, you will get a ticket. If you don't kill yourself first, it's not worth it. A message from the California Highway Patrol and the California Office of Traffic Safety.
Tackling the subjects they told you never to talk about on the only conservative station in the Bay Area. Hot Talk 560 KSFO.
Some look up to the Man of Steel and others follow lines in the web. But I look up to my real life icon, my dad. And calling him anything less than great will be misguided. In his warm arms, I confided all of my fears. And as my time to rear others grows near, I'm reminded that women marry men just like their fathers. And I hope that's true. Anything less, might as well not even bother.
A message from the National Fatherhood Initiative, the Ad Council, and this radio station. Visit fatherhood.org for more information. Have you been a dad today?
When I was a kid, every summer, I loved the summer. What kid didn't? Because in those days, you didn't go to summer school. You didn't go to a camp to advance your mathematical knowledge, another to advance your sports knowledge, another to lose your tubby waist. You went and had fun for the whole summer. And we were kind of poor, so what we did was, to get out of the hot inner city, the family rented a small cottage with all the other families from the neighborhood and relatives up in the cool mountains called the Catskill Mountains, and they were known as bungalow colonies because you got basically a one-room, kitchen, bedroom, bathroom, boom. And your whole family was in there, but they were like, all, the whole thing was filled with your friends and their parents, so it became like a little village. Naturally, it was paradise because every other parent was your parent, and you reverted back to like another time in history, so it was wonderful. We'd play Indians out in the woods, and we'd carve trees and make canoes. God knows what we did. So in one of these places, there was a guy who was a caretaker who lived in an old abandoned barn with his wife, believe it or not. And he like mowed the lawn. He had the hammer, fixed the hammer. His name was Woodchuck Bill. And us kids, it was like a Tom Sawyer thing. We loved Woodchuck Bill. Kids loved. Now remember, he was not a bum. See, today they're bum. They're a homeless. He was what was known as a hobo in those days. And there were people who were hobos. They were sort of respectable in their own way. That was his job category. It was like hobo. He would put it on the IRS. Like, what do you do? Job category, hobo. I don't know what he made, next to nothing. But he lived up in this, as I say, ramshackle, barn-like structure with his... He had a wife, actually. And Woodchuck Bill would regale us kids with his stories. And he was a big guy with a big stomach on him. So the story begins with him saying, all right, kids, come over here. Today they probably arrest him for molestation, just for even telling us a story. Some freak would arrest him. He says, all right, I want all of you to punch me in the stomach. Now, right away, that's rape today. It's raping a child in some way. So we'd all go up with our skinny little arms. We're 9, 8, 7, and punch him in the stomach, and nothing would happen. So naturally, we thought he was Superman. He must have been pretty strong, I mean, if you think about it, because there are 8-year-old kids that can give you quite a belt, even today. Anyway, so we all hit him, and we realized we were nothing compared to Woodchuck Bill. Then we'd sit at his feet, and he would tell us stories. He'd say, I can remember to this day, he would say, well, I've seen hurricanes and I've seen tornadoes. Well, we sat spellbound, like really out of a book from the 19th century. So what I liked most about Woodchuck Bill was that he lived in this barn with almost nothing. He had his few pots and pans, him and his wife, and they hung from like hooks over the thing and they actually cooked in there. But he said he used to eat woodchucks. We'd say, Bill, what do you eat? He said, we eat woodchucks. Who knows if he's telling the truth? I don't know if you can eat a woodchuck. And that's the Woodchuck Bill story. I mean, you wanted something more to it. There is nothing more. That's a jazz story. You got to understand jazz music to understand that story. It ends like boom, and the horn goes down. That's it. But unless you understand how jazz works, you're not going to be, like, satisfied because you want a beginning, a middle, and an end. And then Bill raped us, and he was taken away by Child Protective Services, and we lived miserably ever after. No, it didn't happen that way. Today they'd arrest him for just being Woodchuck Bill. They'd give him treatment. They put him on a pill, and he'd probably go berserk and kill people in the on the IRT, throw him on a third rail when the pill wore off. I was laying in bed last night about 3 in the morning when I started to laugh out loud. And I rarely laugh out loud in bed because it would disturb the dog. He'll think I'm crazy. And I started to laugh hysterically because the thought occurred to me that when I was a youth and still living with my parents, maybe 17, 16, 17 year old, I left pretty young. I don't know when I left, 20. I have no idea when. I remember coming home after a night of carousing with my friends. Well, frankly, I remember coming home to that little attached brick house with the rock-solid front door and turning that lock. There's something about that door. I've never been able to duplicate the doors they had on houses in those days and the locks. When you turn the tumbler on those houses, you heard the tumbler turn. You felt like Willie Sutton breaking into a bank. It was such a wonderful sound. And the minute the door opened, mothballs and heat assailed all of your senses. My mother kept the heat up at around, I'd say, 90 in the winter. And she put mothballs in every article of clothing known to me, like the whole closet. You got to picture this house, an attached house, so to speak, semi-attached, right? Brick, a row house, in other words. Think of a British movie from the 50s. Remember those movies, brick-attached houses? Now think Queens, 50s, post-war attached houses. Small, maybe 20 feet wide, the lot's 100 feet long, the house is maybe, what, 20 by 60, the yard's 40, front and rear, I don't really know. But the house was narrow, but it worked for me. It was like, to me, a palace after where we had come from. And when I got in that, so mothballs were in every clothing bag, but more than the clothing bags, in the hallway when you went in, and so hallway, you had to walk in sideways into the vestibule. But to me, it was wonderful. I didn't care it was a small hallway. At least I had a hallway. To the immediate right of the hallway was a closet door. She had mothballs in there. Every piece of clothing and a vacuum cleaner to go with it. Everything was neat. Don't get me wrong. Nothing was jumbled. But in every coat, a mothball. The woman had, God bless her, she had a phobia about bugs. I don't know what it was. To keep the fur, I don't know what. But I used to say, my, it's so hot in here. My eyes are smarting from the mothballs. Never mind, I like the heat. That was the end of the discussion. There was no discussing it at that point. She would have been great in talk radio, my mother. She closed the argument down just by answering what you started to say. There was no discussion. Never mind, I like the heat. That was it. There was no arguing, no reasoning. Perfect caller to a radio show. Actually, perfect host. But what was this thing with the mothballs? I don't understand. I'm starting to think there may have been a health benefit to mothballs that we don't even understand yet. That's when I broke into laughter in bed, and Teddy rolled over and looked at me like I was crazy. Play Jingle Bell Rock, would you?
Jingle Bell, Jingle Bell, Jingle Bell Rock. Jingle Bells.
I'm not going to get too wound up today, much.
Snowing and blowing.
I'm not going to get too wound up today, not.
Now the jingle hop has begun. Jingle Bell, Jingle Bell, Jingle Bell.
Seen the pictures of me yet? That's a great picture with the sunglasses. If I didn't have the brains I have, I would have been a movie star. Holy, that's a great line. You know, I'm looking at myself, how good-looking I really was at my birthday, which wasn't too long ago. If I didn't have the brains I was gifted with, I would have been a movie star by now. And just think of what you would have lost. Indianapolis, Scott, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Michael. Your Mama Savage was onto something with the mothballs. She probably never saw a mouse or anything in her house as long as she kept those mothballs going.
She hated mice. She was terrified of them. But she was trying to kill the moths. How did she kill the mice?
One of the chemicals in the mothballs, apparently, because my mother and my grandmother did the same thing. They never had mice in their house, and according to a like home remedies book that my mother had, the mothballs, one of the chemicals in them, is a deterrent to mice.
You're kidding. She was terrified of mice. She was a strong woman and not very frightful, but terrified of mice. And I remember once we were in a rented cottage in the mountains, and a mouse got in the cottage. There were no mothballs there because she primarily used them in the in the house we lived in. She didn't have any up in the mountains. And, man, she jumped up on a chair screaming with a broom at the mouse. Why are women afraid of mice? Anyway, thanks for the call. I got the picture. I don't want to go into it.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now. 855-400-SAVAGE. 855-400-7282.
Do you have unfiled tax returns or owe the IRS or state more than $10,000? If you don't take action now, your tax problem is going to get worse, much worse. Seizure of property, bank levies, wage garnishments, and potential criminal prosecution. And if you owe the IRS back payroll taxes, chances are you will be visited at your home or business by an IRS agent. Don't become paralyzed by fear. Take action now. Call the experts at U.S. Tax Shield for help. Our team of experienced tax attorneys can get you protected, stop collections, and negotiate a permanent settlement with the IRS and state, potentially saving you thousands of dollars. At U.S. Tax Shield, our tax advisors will review your case for free, inform you of your rights, and give you a guaranteed quote. No games and no tricky upsells. That's why we have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau and thousands of satisfied clients. Put an end to your torment. Get protected. Get the shield. Call U.S. Tax Shield now at 800-299-1855. That's 800-299-1855. 800-299-1855.
Good evening, I'm Dave Fowler from Shot Talk 560 KSFO. The mother of boxer Hector Macho Camacho says he will likely be taken off life support tomorrow after his sons have arrived to see their father. Camacho is brain dead after being shot in the face outside a bar in his hometown of Puerto Rico. The pilot has died in the crash of a light plane near the Calaveras County Airport this afternoon. Few details are available, but officials say the pilot was the only person on board the plane. And a big crowd packed into San Francisco's Union Square tonight for the official tree lighting ceremony. KSFO traffic, well, it's going to be busy around the shopping malls, also in downtown San Francisco. Everyone's out and about for the night, but the freeways look pretty good. No accidents or stalls being reported. No delays on any of the thoroughfares at the moment. Your weather forecast, chilly tonight, lows in the upper 30s to upper 40s. Tomorrow, sunny and mild, temperatures in the low 60s to low 70s. I'm Dave Fowler, Shot Talk 560 KSFO.
Mike Huckabee.
That it was just not a good day for those of us who are conservative, those of us who thought that the policies of Barack Obama were taking us the wrong path. But apparently, majority of Americans disagree. And that's what happens in this country. We are about giving our citizens the right to make choices. They made a choice. And those of us who lost have to accept it.
Conservative, not mad about it. Join the discussion with Governor Mike Huckabee. Weekdays 9 to noon on Hot Talk 560 KSFO.
Mattress Discounter's amazing Tempur-Pedic offer ends Sunday. That means time is running out to get 24 months interest-free financing on Tempur-Pedic, the most highly recommended bed in America. Plus, get free delivery. So if you're thinking Tempur-Pedic, think Mattress Discounters. But hurry, this special financing offer ends Sunday at Mattress Discounters, where you look for the red tag and save.
Have a good night's sleep for less. Mattress Discounters.
Get the latest news and information from your favorite radio station on Facebook. Become a fan of Hot Talk 560 KSFO on Facebook and get the news and views you won't hear anywhere else. Fans of our Facebook page can view and post event pictures, receive station updates, and share their opinions with us and other KSFO fans. Fans are also eligible to win prizes, only available on Facebook. To become a fan, go to Facebook.com/560KSFO and click like.
The holidays are here again with parties, family gatherings, and plenty of picture taking. And you want your hair to look its very best when you're all dressed up, right? Nothing works better than Ovation Cell Therapy to help restore your hair's natural beauty and healthy appearance.
Ovation is 100% guaranteed to grow your hair stronger and stop breakage naturally. In no time at all, your hair will look thicker and healthier and feel stronger with all the natural luster and beauty you remember. So do your hair a favor this holiday season and try Ovation Cell Therapy.
Look your best this holiday season with Ovation Cell Therapy. Buy a set for you
and give a set to a special friend on your holiday list and save on both.
Ovation makes a great holiday gift.
Order your Ovation holiday gift set now before they're all gone at OvationHair.com. That's OvationHair.com, and be sure to enter KSFO at checkout to receive a special introductory discount. OvationHair.com.
Relax, it's the holidays. Take a load off and join us this Saturday from noon until 1 on KSFO to hear strategies on how to protect your wealth and build wealth safely. The Ask Mr. Annuity Show is your roadmap to retirement. Mr. Annuity, he has the answers on all things retirement, from immediate annuity to tax-free retirement to income for life strategies. Tune in this Saturday from noon until 1 on KSFO. For more information, go to AskMrAnnuity.com. That's AskMrAnnuity.com.
Mike Huckabee.
Is it fair? Is it fair? Is it fair? He's paying this and I'm paying this. You don't understand what this thing going on.
Weekdays 9 till noon on Hot Talk 560 KSFO.
What thing's going to tell you about? A, how I just survived coffee at a Starbucks in San Francisco. This took the patience of Job. Before the show, I went down. I do almost everything myself to know what Life 101 really is. I could hire someone. But, you know, I figured out it's actually good for me to otherwise I wind up like George Bush Sr. Wow, golly be gee, that's a checkout stand in a supermarket. Whoa, cool. Wow, that's a laser. Ooh. No, I got to go buy coffee and see how you people suffer, fools, ungladly. Just before the show, I ran out for a Starbucks. Now, I survived Starbucks. It's not easy, I got to tell you. I'm in a rush. It's like, you know, 20 minutes before the show. I should have sent someone out for it, but I tend to work alone. I like to be alone. I ran out for a coffee. I figured I could sneak in at that time, though. And bingo, I hit three people ahead of me, and a girl jumps in ahead of me. And the three people, everyone's cute. And what kind of suite do you want? I think, and there were men, and everyone was with a cute, no one would say, just give me the blueberry cake, or give me the oatmeal cookie. Everything was like with a cutesy thing. Oh, I think I'll have the... Oh, you're such a sweetie pie. All right, so I had to live through them. The feet were curling up inside the shoe on that one. I don't say anything. So now there's only one in front of me. And did I hit the lottery with her? I figured she looked normal. She was going to say, coffee and get out of there. But no, here it was. I'll have a double grande latte espresso decaf with extra low-fat cream and extra foam and a soy blast sprinkle, please. I'm not making this up. I said, no. Now I'm getting enraged inside. My eyes are already searching to take it out on something. Again, she repeated. The guy didn't even know what she said. That's right. And a sweet voice on it. I'll have a double grande latte espresso decaf with extra low-fat cream and extra foam and a soy blast sprinkle, please. And then, to top it off, after the guy makes it first, she pulls out a coupon. Prior to surviving Starbucks, I did something even more threatening to my psyche, which was I went to Fisherman's. I got into the city early, so I went by bicycle to Fisherman's Wharf. I haven't been there for a year. I stopped going for about a year. I went once this year. And I went and had a bowl of clam chowder soup and some joint near the water. The guy gave me a bowl of cornstarch with the droppings of a clam in it. I don't know how they didn't get arrested for this. How do they sell this on Fisherman's Wharf? Then the nerve of this mutt, he says to me, do you want a cup or a bowl? I was in a rush. I was on the phone. I said, give me a cup. The cup was $5.95. A bowl would have been a dollar more. I paid and left. I didn't care. But the point was the soup was garbage. How do they serve this to tourists? With it was like cornstarch with the essence of a squeezed clam in it? But the schmucks don't know what they're eating. That's why they call it the Redneck Riviera. You should see the blimps walking around down there. You know, you should see the average American. I don't know what they have in their brains. IQ average, 65 after a fish meal. They walk into cars. They walk in front of cable cars like blimps floating around. Stuffed, stupid, morons. You can push them in any direction you want. So I'm bicycling back past two U.S. warships from World War II, the Jeremiah O'Brien and the USS Pompanito, a U.S. submarine from World War II. You marvel at it. 120 men were in that thing in World War II. If you were to take that ship today, and look at the average fat, obese, disgusting American tourist walking on Fisherman's Wharf in San Francisco. A, you couldn't get more than 18 of them into that submarine. B, you'd have to sue the Navy under the ADA to have them a blowtorch open the hatches to get him in and out. Every time I encounter anything outside the house, it's a problem. Who serves a man a bowl of clam chowder soup that is made primarily of cornstarch and the essence of a clam? And charges them $6.95. They're lucky that I didn't say anything to them. I went there like invisible to see what it would be like if I were a tourist. But they don't know what they're eating. They're drunk, most of them. You put a glass of wine in them, a cheap glass of rot gut wine. They get giddy. What do they know what they are? Play Staying Alive by the Bee Gees. I see John Travolta with Bell Bottom doing disco in the aisles of a 747 with his friends from Scientology, meeting their god as they fly across the Earth's atmosphere, discoing into the next universe. I think I had one pair of bell bottoms. They made you feel so free, didn't they? They give you a sense of freedom, those velvet bell bottoms. I don't know. I wish I could say what I really meant on this show, what needs to be done. Wish I could really let it out. One day, just open up the 12 cylinders inside my soul. Right now, I'm running on about 6, 7. If I could really pour gas down those cylinders, I could give you an action plan that would have you alerted, alive. You'd feel alive you haven't felt, like you haven't felt in 30 years. I could bring this country to a halt. I could change things in 2 days. But instead, I will just play disco music. Play it a little louder, please. Louder, louder. Picture all of the truckers. Picture every independent trucker in America blocking every tunnel and every bridge in America to say enough is enough to the Congress and the oil companies. Just envision that. You want to have a vision? Let's start with the basics. One day, one strike like in France where every independent trucker closes down every bridge and every tunnel in the United States of America. You want to see those liars and rats in Congress finally do something instead of pointing fingers at each other? You want to see the Seven Sister Oil Companies go to prison? Pay, play, 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 staying alive. Go ahead, play, staying alive. Play, staying alive. Go ahead. Go ahead. I'm not recommending this, of course. That's plan of action number one for today in the fantasy land of the Savage Nation. But we're just doing disco. Disco on the Savage Nation. Staying alive. Staying alive. But I have a dream. I have a dream that one day I'll awaken to every bridge and tunnel in America blocked by the independent truckers of America who say, up yours, Johnson. Up yours, Jack. You've jacked us up. You've killed us. You brought in drivers from Mexico. You've undermined us and killed us. Up yours, Jack. All you corporate CEOs, here's the middle finger from the truck driver. How's that for step one to take back America on the Savage Nation? Staying alive, staying alive. Staying alive, staying alive. Step number one. Fantasy in the Savage Nation. A fantasy in the Savage Nation. We become France. France becomes us. The workers go on strike. The real workers, not the illegal alien workers. Strike for illegal things. No, the legitimate American truck driver. He blocks every bridge and every tunnel and every artery in America stops. The country comes to a halt. No food, no garbage, no fuel, nothing in, nothing out. Suddenly the CEO crooks, the pirates, in business suits. They can't do the two-step. Suddenly the thieves and criminals in Congress who point fingers to deceive us can no longer do the two-step. I'll be right back. Keep on dreaming, Mike.
Savage.
Who's watching your home when you're not there? It could be a burglar. Burglars prefer to break in when they think no one is home, and no one will stop them. Don't be an easy target for intruders. Protect your home with a free security system monitored by ADT, the leader in home security. Call now and get free hardware, free medical and fire alert, and free activation. It's an $850 value. Call right now and you'll also get 6 free sensors. That's 6 points of protection for free. Just call Protect Your Home, your authorized ADT dealer, at 1-888-987-3232. You'll get 24-hour protection, and there's no cost for parts or activation. Call now about a free security system monitored by ADT. Call 1-888-987-3232. $99 installation charge, 36-month monitoring agreement at $35.99 per month. Total package includes 6 door window sensors. Labor charges may apply. Call for terms and conditions to this offer and Protect Your Home license numbers. Call now, 1-888-987-3232.
One little joint supplement,
You know this powerful little pill is great for your joints, it's great for your cartilage, it even has powerful benefits to help increase your mobility and flexibility. But the joint supplements of today are sadly incomplete because they don't start relieving joint discomfort immediately. Until now. Introducing the complimentary 2-week sample of fast-acting Instaflex, our most powerful joint formula ever. It can start relieving joint discomfort in just a few days. The only thing our complimentary sample of Instaflex is missing is the price. Because right now, we're offering adults a complimentary 2-week sample as part of a nationwide giveaway. Call and claim your sample today. 1-800-946-9745. Great for your knees, hands, even your hips. Fast-acting Instaflex can start relieving joint discomfort in just a few days. Instaflex is available at GNC, Rite Aid Pharmacies, and Vitamin World, where you can only get your complimentary 2-week sample by calling 1-800-946-9745. Call now for your 2-week Instaflex sample. 1-800-946-9745.
So this notion of good news is bizarre to me.
Mark Levin.
So pushing it down the road is not good news. The Constitution being damaged is not good news.
Weekdays at 3.
Expanding the taxing powers of the government without even identifying which taxing powers were expanding, that's not good news. This whole thing is crap. This is why people are disgusted. We're fed up with the way Washington works.
Or doesn't work.
3 to 6 weekdays on Hot Talk 560 KSFO.
Diamonds, the gift that lasts forever, and there's never been a better time to buy. Worldwide diamond prices have gone up. The Jewelry Exchange has a large stock of diamonds at the old prices. The Jewelry Exchange has certified 1-carat round and fancy solitaires for $18.90. 1 to 2-carat non-certifieds are just $9.90 per carat, and 1-carat studs are just $3.99. The Jewelry Exchange has thousands of GIA diamonds, guaranteed the lowest price. We have the hottest designer lines in micro pave, invisible, and platinum, and set in size while you watch. Diamond floating heart pendants with 33 full cut diamonds are $99. 4-carat diamond and amethyst pendant and earring sets are just $99. The Jewelry Exchange has thousands of rings, bracelets, earrings, and pendants guaranteed to appraise for double. That's right, double. Some restrictions apply. Plus no interest for 6 months. Buy factory direct and save. The Jewelry Exchange in Redwood City, 650-367-6500. That's 650-367-6500. Or shop at jewelryexchange.com.
If you owe back taxes to the IRS you can't afford to pay, now is the time to act. I'm tax attorney Robert Goldstein, and a few months ago, the IRS made significant changes to its Offer and Compromise program to settle your past due taxes. And since that time, my firm has seen more offers accepted and at significantly reduced dollar amounts. So if you need a fresh start with the IRS, this is it. My firm has over 28 years of experience helping taxpayers with all aspects of tax and bankruptcy law. Whether you need an offer and compromise for individual or payroll taxes, audit representation, or past due tax returns filed, we can help. We work closely with our clients to resolve all of their tax issues, whether it is the IRS, state, or both. The law offices of Robert Goldstein are a local firm with offices throughout the Bay Area, and we always offer a free consultation. To schedule your free consultation with me, call toll-free 1-888-TAX-EXIT. That's 888-T-A-X-E-X-I-T, 888-TAX-EXIT, and make us your last stop.
Get the latest news and information from your favorite radio station on Facebook. Become a fan of Hot Talk 560 KSFO on Facebook and get the news and views you won't hear anywhere else. Fans of our Facebook page can view and post event pictures, receive station updates, and share their opinions with us and other KSFO fans. Fans are also eligible to win prizes, only available on Facebook. To become a fan, go to Facebook.com/560KSFO and click like.
If talk radio came with a warning label, listen before it does. I'm the only conservative station in the Bay Area. Hot Talk 560, KSFO.
So I love radio stations when you travel, too. You don't know what you're going to get into. Like the charming spotlights from 1972 that were used, it looks like in someone's room, like in a Wayne's World. Or the chair you're sitting on, it looked like it was used in a Larry Flint film in 1973 in Pasadena, bought at auction in Wyoming. Radio studios are very weird. I mean, it's not. That's the difference, because this is like a real medium. I'm not putting them down. The nicest people on earth, I don't really care either. I'm not like Mr. Fancy where it has to be perfect. You ever see guys with perfect studios? They're idiots. You ever see them on television, $3 million studios, idiots running around in the back with perfect hair, and they don't say anything?
Savage.
Today's show is called Black Dog, Black Man. And here's how it works. Here's how it works, and it's a hard story to tell. It's a hard story to start, But once I get into the story, it's going to be very easy to tell. I don't have a way to begin this story other than to tell you I was on my bicycle before the show in one of my moods. I go in and out of moods and grousing about it. I just read that there was a Russian in New York who bought a $150 million apartment, so I started to get mad. Grousing about that, saying, I don't understand this world I'm living in. There are guys coming back from Iraq without legs and arms. And this guy has enough money to buy another $150 million apartment. Well, something's wrong with the picture here. So I said, look, I have a choice right now. I could sit here getting angry, or I get on my bicycle and take a 10-minute ride. Because I remember that many years ago, 20 years ago, I read a couple of self-help books. And one of them said that in the few minutes that you're sitting there grousing about how bad things are, you can send a letter, make a phone call, run around the block. And you know what? It helped me then, and it helps me now. So I got on the bike, and I went down to a kind of isolated area where they're building some new houses by the water. Because I love to watch houses under construction. It's very optimistic to see the wood and the contractors and the this and the that. And I'm out by the point, and I'm coming back, and I see this big, black, Great Dane off a leash. Now, I happen to be afraid of black dogs. I mean, big black dogs. In fact, big white dogs. In fact, big dogs generally frighten me because I was bitten when I was young, right down to the bone, and had to be hospitalized. So I have a real respect for dogs. So I said, now, I got to be very careful as I go by this Great Dane. I don't know whose it is. If I let out anger inside of me, the dog's going to feel it. If I let out fear, the dog's going to fear it. So I said, just be cool and go. Don't go too fast. Don't go. So I go by, the dog doesn't bother me. I said, thank God for that. Then I come upon a guy who's got a truck, who's doing auto detailing. And he's a big black guy. I've seen him once in a while. Huge, I mean like a football-sized guy. And he comes out of the truck and he says to me, you're looking good. And I said, what? He said, you lose some weight? And we start to talk. I didn't know the guy. I've seen him around. But he thought he knew me. He said he knew me. Not thought, he knew me. For a number of years, he's been around this county doing cars. He's a great guy. I'm going to tell you the story now, where it goes. So one thing leads to another, and he says to me, you remind me of another radio guy I knew. He says, this guy was as smooth as can be. He could walk the ghetto, and he could walk the White House. So I said, you know, let me tell you something. I said, David, I grew up in New York City, and I had to learn how to swim with all kinds of fish. New York City was a very big fish tank, and if you didn't learn how to swim the right way, they'd tear your fins off. And he laughed. He says, well, they wouldn't just tear your fins off. He says, they'd eat you for breakfast. And we started to talk. Now, he grew up in a black ghetto here in Marin County. There is one, and it was called Marin City. It's an interesting story unto itself. The housing was built by the magnate, Kaiser. When they were building Liberty ships in World War II, they needed to bring in workers, and they didn't bring them in from Mexico. They brought workers in from the South, and they were largely black people, and they built housing for them. And you may not know, but many of the ship workers, you know about Rosie the Riveter, of course, but you didn't know that most of the Liberty ships were built by black people, particularly out here in Sausalito at the Kaiser shipyards. So the housing was built nearby, and it's become basically, largely a black community. And naturally, the way things have evolved in our society, and blame whoever you want, it hasn't been a picnic for the people living in there. So we were walking around, and we were just standing there talking about the dog and the this and the that. So I said, well, how did you come through that place and come out the way you are? You see, he's a pastor. In addition to running a service that, you know, polishes cars, he happens to be a minister. His name is Pastor David Hall. And I'm going to tell you more about that in a few minutes and where this went and how that went there and how positive this man was. And we were laughing. He says, you know, I know people around here, very rich people. He says, their children can't play with anybody. I said, why? He says, well, I told him the reason your kid can't play with anyone is because you've given them everything. They got all these toys. They sit in the house and they play electronic toys. They don't know how to play with anybody. I said, isn't that a shame? And I told him that I'm a people person, that I basically am not really alone, or I don't really like to be alone. But I figured if I get out on the bike, I said I'd run into somebody to talk to. And I said, sure enough, this was like hitting, you know, the triple lottery for me. In terms of the kind of person I am, it's like all four cherries came up on that big, slot machine in the sky of humanity. And this goes back to what I told you a story years ago about me and Brother Billy down in Harlem when I was a kid. But that's a whole separate story. But this is going to lead somewhere else. So we're talking and this and that. We look up a hill where they're building the houses above where he's polishing the cars. And he says, when I was a kid, he said, you know what we used to do for fun? I said, what? He said, we'd slide down the hill on, like, linoleum. I said, I can't believe it. I said, we did the same thing. I said, I lived in a tenement on a block called Longfellow Avenue in the Bronx. And above me was a hill called Bryan Avenue. Between us was a big empty woodlot that had a huge hill on it that was denuded of foliage. And we'd slide down it on oilcloth, you know, old linoleum. And I said, well, we'd also play war. He said, how'd that work? I said, well, we'd take the garbage can covers, we'd put them in our hands, and there'd be like a gang of us. I'm talking kids 5, 6, 7 years old. No one had guns or knives. And the game was to run up the hill against the other street as they were raining ash down upon us. And like Gladiator, bounce, bounce, bing, bing. And I said, my head would get split open 100 times in these things. I always had a knack. I don't know where the ash guys, you know what the ash is from? He says, no. I said, well, in those days, I said, they had garbage that they would burn in incinerators. And the leftover of that burn was like a volcanic ash. You know, thank God they don't do it anymore. And I said, these kids would get the ash out of the incinerator and rain it down upon us. And you'd have to fend it off. You can go home, you can get killed. So I said, many a time I'd come home with my head bleeding, with blood running down my head. I'd come home, my mother would faint before I got through the door. She was like a panic case. She'd go, oh, my God, and she'd fall on the floor basically screaming and yelling, I'm bleeding, and she's doing nothing. But I said, next door, I had an aunt who was like stoic, like Russian aunt. Nothing fazed this woman. She'd look at me with the sober face, get out the peroxide and bandage it up, and that was it. So he lit up. David did, and he says, when are you going to write that book? I was like, bung. I said, what? He said, when are you going to write that book? I said, what do you mean? He said, well, all those stories of your youth, he says, those are great stories. Well, we talked about so many different things. And it turns out that Pastor David Hall of the Big God Ministries is running a turkey drive for Thanksgiving, and he's trying to, you know, do the right thing, and I'm going to send a little money over there. But the point is, he said, would you like to be with me on the 19th and the 20th as we give out turkeys to the poor? I says, yes. He says, no one will know anything about you. You'll just be another guy handing out turkeys. Yeah, I'm going to hand out turkeys. How do you like that? And send some money for turkeys. So he went back to when he was poor, and he said, I got to tell you, I grew up on welfare. He says, my father left us when I was five. He says, I'm one of six children. And he says, yeah, I ate the government cheese. He says with a big smile. He says, yeah, I grew up on the government cheese. And he says, I'd say to my mother, he says, Mom, if there's a God, why am I hungry? Now I said, oh, God, what a question. I said, kids are so smart. I said, they're brilliant. And he said, my mother told me, never be bitter, never be angry, always have faith. Now, this is the most important part of the story, is the faith that this man had. He didn't turn to bitterness. He didn't turn to anger. He didn't hate Whitey. He didn't hate America. He just did what he did, and he did it, and he did it, and he did it. And you know what? He's the richest man I've met in recent years. He is the wealthiest man I have ever met in the last 10 years. And I've met people with a lot of money. And I said, you know, you remind me of the story that Tolstoy wrote, The Kingdom of God is Within. I said, because you do emanate the goodness. He said, well, Michael, if you don't give anything back, you're going to be empty inside. And this man lives to give, because he said in giving he gets love. Now, if this is not the epitome of what the Christian religion today is all about, I'd like to know what is. And so I guess the moral of the story is that the humanity in the other man can never be known until you have a contact with the other man. And, I remember what a particular story, before I go to the next spot, got to him. I said, let me tell you a story. My dad owned a little store. And he had started on the streets of New York with a pushcart. He came from the gutter. He was an immigrant with nothing. And he never really became a wealthy man. I said, but he had a little stall inside a store. And he sold first the used things. Then he sold some antique things. And he always made a living. We had a house and always food on the table. And I said, well, one day, I said, it was all white people in there. I said, never did you see anyone but white people in that market. Now, remember who I'm talking to now. I'm talking to a stranger who happens to be a black man, who happens to be, like, you talk about fullback football team, huge man, and we're just looking at each other and talking. So I said, it's an all-white store. In comes a black man, well-dressed. And I said, he says to my dad, how much is that? My father says, oh, a certain amount of money. How much is that? He's pointing at different statues. All right, how much is that? How much? He says, I'll take them all. So now the man leaves, writes him a check, and my father pulls me over, and he says, I want to tell you something, Michael. He says, listen to what just happened in this store, because it's a lesson you're going to learn for the rest of your life. I said, what's that? He says, never judge a man by the color of his skin. He said, you never know who the man is, you never know what the man is, and you never know what that man's all about until you have an interaction with him. So when I told it to Pastor David, Pastor Hall, he says, that is a beautiful story. He says, you've got to tell that story. And so I've just told that story, and I'll be right back.